House will come to order. Chairman McComey.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. Speaker.
Please proceed.
Mr. Speaker, today we have representatives from the hospitality, tourism, and retail industry here for the Governor's Conference on Hospitality and Tourism. Hospitality, tourism, and retail play a critical role in Wyoming's economy and employ over 30,000 full and part-time employees. Some have said this industry teaches America how to work. Workers learn skills such as the importance of serving customers, being on time, problem-solving, and other skills. Please welcome the members of the Wyoming's second leading industry.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have privilege of the floor?
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Now, I'll bet you guys can all count on one hand the number of times I've been able to get up here in the past 7 years and introduce someone from my district, Hot Springs County. So it is with great pride that I introduce to you the Executive Director, Kathy Wallingford of the Chamber of Commerce, the President of our Chamber, Donna Nally, and Steve Nally, the Master Distiller for Wyoming Whiskey.
The throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
I'm sure all of you have been wondering whether I dropped the ball this year and did not take care of arranging for 61st legislator mugs. Rest assured, I did not forget. I was just, as usual, a little late, but the mugs should be coming in soon. I think I've ordered plenty. They will be $5 each, and please just email me how many you would like, and if I get, you can't have that many, Representative Blake, not one for everybody in Green River, please. If you could email me how many you would like, and if I get too many orders, then I'll sort it out, but they should be in within a day or two, and you don't have to pay me till you pick up your mugs.
Okay, we're still at that order of business. Bills on third reading and final passage, regular list. House Bill 127, Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 7 to House Bill 127. Third reading amendment number 7 is an amendment that I had drafted this morning that would stipulate that there would be no program foundation dollars that would be expended for random drug testing of students in districts without parental consent. This is an issue that has come up in the state. We've got, I think, 3 districts now in the state of Wyoming doing random drug testing without parental consent. It has been determined to be unconstitutional in several states, including the state of Washington, who has a constitution that's very similar to ours. I fundamentally believe that school districts should not be drug testing our students without parental consent. It would be absolutely no different than you being pulled over on the side of the highway without any probable cause and asked to urinate in a cup to be tested for drugs. And we all know that that would be a gross violation of our constitutional rights. So I would ask for your favorable consideration.
All right. First and second time. Question being called. All those in favor, third reading amendment number 7 to House Bill 127, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Third reading number 7 to House Bill 127 has been adopted. Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Another 61st. Bring you third reading amendment number 8 to House Bill 127. And ladies and gentlemen, again, if you had that handout with the star in the circle, if you'd go to the front page of that, this is a one-pager, front to back. And does everybody still have that, or did you chuck it before the... Did you throw it away after our last debate thinking we were done with it? I see a few waving out there. Okay, great. Now, on the front page with the star, it talks about the various effect sizes. And there's just a little bit up above in the narrative at the top of that page. An effect size of 1.0 would indicate the average student's performance would move from the 50th to the 83rd percentile. So a research field effect size is greater than 0.25 is significant and greater than 0.50 is substantial. So you go down here to tutoring in the middle. It talks about this is the model that we purchased. Talking about implementation now of it. And you see tutoring, comma, one-on-one. And there's lots of guidelines. Usually it's like a 1 to 5, those kind of things. But we fund certified teachers as tutors. That effect size is 0.4 to 2.5. Very significant. Now, the back side of this page shows you how the model's being implemented. And I've circled up on the right-hand side. You can see through the 9-10, 5 years later, you see tutor. And you see in the model, we fund 329 tutors, and you can see how many are actually hired out there. Can you see that? 173, isn't it? There'll be a quiz on this later. No. 329 we funded, and we only hire 173. So they're not being utilized. It's an implementation issue. Now, just for comparison, look down two lines where it says instructional facilitators. I circled that as well. And the difference with instructional facilitators and tutors is we take instructional facilitators and have them outside the block grant. They are their own category. The only way it can be expended is for, in fact, instructional facilitators, or you don't get the money. Okay? Look at the implementation on that. 270 funded. We actually have 276 statewide. So it's 100%. So folks will do what we ask if we kind of think that's important and mandate it. Okay, so to this amendment, ladies and gentlemen, and if you go down to line 27 of the amendment, the first two lines, it talks about certified tutors. This amendment does what previous amendment number 6 did with class sizes. It requires our districts to employ certified tutors, and if they cannot meet those requirements, they can come back upon petition by the district and get released to that responsibility with a plan for full implementation, I'm sure, in the future. But so that's really the issue. Stand for questions. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One of the issues I would have to ask the bringer of the amendment is that it would appear to me that the appropriate methodology to see if tutors really matter would be to see if the high employment of tutors takes place in some of our best performing school districts. I mean, I guess I would have a lot more faith in what our best performing school districts are finding about the proper number of tutors relative to other inputs compared to, a model that was developed in some other state or some other country. So, I guess I would question, I'd reserve some judgment on this. If it wasn't provable that our best performing districts are going by what the model says the number of tutors should be, then I don't think we ought to be going this route. Thank you.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We've been over this ground before, and I've just at the outset ask you to resist this amendment. First of all, the assertion, even the suggestion that tutoring isn't being done, I reject that. It is being done. It's being done in schools in my district, and it's being done effectively. It may not be. Tutors may not be utilized in the manner contemplated in the model, but that's a block grant at its best, using the money effectively to produce results. Our district hires paraprofessionals as tutors, aides if you prefer. Let's talk about what an aide is. You might think of an aide, you have a picture in your head, but in a lot of our aides are 4-year degree holders. They are teachers who have not been able to get jobs, so they'll be willing to take a job in the district for $1 an hour under scale just to be there and get a foot in the door. They're trained paraprofessionals, trained in tutoring. They work with kids before school, during school, after school. They do it in small group settings so that they can reach more kids. You can hire more tutors that way and reach maybe 50 kids in a day, where if you were following the one-on-one model, you might only reach 8 kids in a day. So here's the summary. There's more bang for the buck the way it's being done in my district, and I suspect in many other smaller districts. It's working, and the proof is in the pudding. Let's look at the test scores, if that's a performance indicator that has been suggested you might want to hold up, and I would. The scores for grade 3 reading and grade 8 math in my district are right at the top of the heap. And high school graduation rate, not bad, 89 point something, again, right up there. So let's resist this, and let's reward innovation and flexibility and success on and against the amendment.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Rising against the amendment and agreeing and concurring with my colleague from the East, Mr. Speaker, we have to have flexibility with these block grants. Tutors are being used successfully in our district, and I think he hit all of the points on the head. I would urge the body to resist this amendment.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, would ask the body to resist this amendment, although I very much appreciate the motivation for the amendment, and it's something that I hope that we pay attention to over the next couple of years, how model elements are actually being utilized by districts. But if the body will remember, with the Standing Committee amendment, we did pass a provision that has districts report back to us the use of certified tutors for grades K through 3 that the students aren't proficient in reading. So we're already asking for some of the information that this amendment is trying to get at. So again, I'd ask the body to resist this amendment at this point, and we'll use the information that we are getting from what we mandated with the Standing Committee amendment to inform our decisions. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. On and for the amendment, I guess I, in hearing some of the resistance to this amendment, am either reading it wrong or misunderstanding those arguments. This amendment isn't asking for any information that we're going to get from a standing committee amendment. And with regard to the comments of districts being able to utilize the tutors how they see fit, I really see nothing in here at all that would preclude them from doing exactly what they're doing now. All this amendment does is say, if we're going to give you money under the model to have tutors, we want you to have tutors. If you're not going to use the money for that, then we need to direct those resources elsewhere. This is analogous to the amendment we passed earlier with regard to the smaller classroom sizes. If we're going to sit down here and we develop a model that's research-based best practices, and we allocate money within that model for those purposes, all we're saying is granted, yes, it's a block grant, and you have a lot of discretion. Use that discretion on how you use tutors, but this amendment answers the threshold question, which says, are you using tutors at all? Are you using the money for tutors? That's all this amendment does. It says, if we give you the money, you're going to use it for tutors. It doesn't dictate how you do that, or your ability to be creative, whether it's one-on-one or 50 at a time, has nothing to do with that. And so I would urge us to be careful in the debate and on this policy decision. And at the end, I hope you would support the amendment.
Representative Yagi, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just what was said, I'm not sure we're understanding. At least my understanding is, we're paying for the tutors, and that money can be used for tutors, but some of the districts are using it for aides. And in my district, I had aides instead of tutors, and we had more aides. And I, just like the other representative said a couple times before, I think we got more bang for our buck using the money for the tutors for aides, which did about the same thing. So I'm thinking we need to resist this amendment.
Chairman Korberg, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, I am on and against this amendment. This amendment does, in fact, ask each district to provide evidence to the state on how it has spent that money, and then goes on to say that they can petition again for a waiver if they're for inability to employ certified staff for this purpose. We're talking a major policy issue. We're either going to continue the block grant program, or we're going to start picking it to death to where we really don't have the block grant program any longer, and we're going to start telling local school boards, we're not only going to tell them how much we're giving them, we're going to start telling them how they're going to spend it. We're headed down this road. We've already passed one amendment that's done this. Now this is the second one, and we're picking at the block grant program and taking away discretion from local school boards. So I think it's a local control issue, and if a district's doing a good job with the resources they have, I just don't know why we would want to continue to go down this road. So I'm on and against the amendment.
Chairman Teeters, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, and I appreciate the good conversation that we're having about local control and the role of the block grant. The real issue is that we have spent over $1.3 billion a year. We have a fiduciary responsibility in this institution to ensure that there are instructional strategies on the ground that work. The thing about the difference between aides and tutors, and we go back and forth, is that there is no data and no studies to show that aides can give instruction as well as a certified tutor. We have spent a lot of money studying this. We have had people out in the field looking at these strategies in other states. And the bottom line is, the data is just not there when it comes to aides. I just want everybody to understand that as you're making your policy decision. As far as picking apart the block grant, we have things inside the model and outside the model. And one thing we've discovered in the last 5 years is that as we continue to put things inside the model, the strategies do not get implemented. They don't do it. And so if you want somebody to use a strategy that we have studied and proven and been able to empirically prove that this strategy works, the only way you're going to get them to implement it on the ground is to pull it out and say, you get the money if you do the program. If you don't do the program, you don't get the money. Now, either we believe in the data that we've got, and I think it's valid. I haven't heard anybody come forward and say that it's not. Then we have good evidence to show that this strategy will work if it's implemented. It's not being implemented. And so that is pertinent to the conversation. You need to know what you're voting on when you vote on it. And this isn't just some crazy idea out there. They're professionals that have been able to prove to us with data that these strategies work. And so work your will, but it isn't unusual or uncommon what we're attempting to do, and we do have data to prove it.
Chairman Lockhart, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've watched that funding model since 6 years ago when I was on the Education Committee and we started setting it up, and some of the things that we had expected and the data would suggest that we should have had installed are just not happening, and I think I'm one of many who don't believe we're getting the results that any of us want. And one of the things is class sizes and measurements and some of the other tools that we put in the funding model. And if they're not being implemented, class sizes, and in this case, tutors, we're not knowing whether what we were basing our decision for the higher funding on is working or not. I would encourage support for this amendment and the bill when we finally pass it.
Chairman Harvey, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. On and against the amendment, if it said paraprofessionals and certifieds, then I could support it. But I can tell you that I have seen some paraprofessionals. They have an associate's degree. They work with children. They've been in our school system for 20 years. They do one-on-one work with kids, and they are getting results, and we see the results. And what we're seeing in our district is that as our district works harder to comply with the strict guidelines of the model, that they're having to get rid of some of the paraprofessional or reassign them to other things. And so you have less people working one-on-one with the kids. And I just see that paraprofessional tutor model does work. I've seen it work. I can't answer to national statistics. I can just say that if it said paraprofessionals, I would support it. But the way it's written, that they need to be certified teachers that are the tutors, I'm a no vote.
Representative Patton, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just am a little confused how the committee during the year, during the interim, came up with the figures that they did in the model, and now we find an amendment to debate that reduces it without regard to the schools that are using the tutors and using them not only quite successfully but also exemplarily. So it seems to me that this kind of amendment is somewhat tardy, if not unnecessary, and I urge you to vote against it.
Anyone else for their first time? First time? Okay, we're on to second time. Second time, Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just did want to make clear that in the wording of this amendment, it calls for funding for certified tutors. It calls for districts to provide evidence to the state that they have expended funds for the use of certified tutors. They're taking away the block grant ability to develop your own strategy for effective tutoring. And it's been alleged that wasn't the case, but that is in the wording of this amendment. Again, I ask you to resist it. Thank you.
Anyone else for their second time? Second time? Mr. Speaker.
And I think I understand the distinction from the description from the good representative from House District 25. The question is if we're going to provide money for tutors that are certified. You know, I mean, we've discussed this. We allocated the money for certified tutors. Do you want the district to utilize certified tutors or paraprofessionals? Maybe we need to look inside the block grant and look at something to do with paraprofessionals. In my district and in my experience, I mean, a paraprofessional do a lot of great work, but they're not certified tutors. And the bottom line with this is if you're going to allocate money in the block grant for a specific purpose, the specific purpose should be followed. I understand that there's a lot of discretion in the block grant. That's exactly what that's for. But I don't understand how it's much different than classroom sizes. And this is what we've been talking about for two solid years, which was this. Use these funds in your discretion, but when we've allocated within the model, based on research, specific funds for a specific purpose, and it's not happening, at some point when local control was taken away in the school finance litigation and we became the ones that decided these issues, at some point the responsibility shifts to us to make sure the funds we allocate are used for their intended purpose, because it's all for the success of the kids. And to me, if we want to change this somehow or look at it within the model or work on some amendments on the other side to include some of those things districts are doing, that would be great and fine with me. But if we're going to allocate the resource, then we need to carry that through. Otherwise, we can't expect them to have smaller classrooms. They can do just as they've done in the past, which is in some instances give raises to employees rather than hiring additional employees to have a smaller classroom faculty ratio. That's what the other amendment dealt with. Same exact thing. Are we gonna require them to use the money the way it was intended, or are we not?
Anyone else for their second time prior to the sponsor? Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, you know, we tell the school districts that they have this block grant, and we tell them that you need to make things work out. And we tell them that you can't, that the school lunch program needs to be self-sustaining. And yet the school districts recognize that people can't always pay what it's cost to provide that school lunch. And so we say, well, that's all right. There's enough money in the model. They can find the money if they want to. And we've said that on many occasions on this floor, is that there is enough money in the model. We talk about transportation and about districts making up the difference because there's enough money in the model. And yet we continue to say, follow the model to the letter, follow the model to the letter, and don't make any deviations from following the model, because we said, and we're the policymakers. And yet we expect them to make up the difference in some of the areas where they have things just a little different than everybody else. And my goodness, can't we have a little bit of local control? And we continually ask them, find it in the model. You got a block grant. It's a block grant. You do what you want to do with your block grant. And then we specifically outline what to do with the block grant. And we continue to tie their hands on how to allocate the money in their own school district. On and against the amendment.
Your second time, Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and appreciate the debate. And I just want to really bring this back to what it's to about tutors. And I want to talk about effect sizes and the significant investment we've made. And we have a block grant, but we've always had things funded outside the block grant. We have instructional facilitators in this state. They're outside the block grant funding model. Why do we have them there? Because 5 years ago the recalibration was all about the money. It was all about making sure this was cost-based to our schools. Very little talk about it. There was no talk about accountability. There was no talk about how. But then this instructional facilitators, we were pushing the edge of it, and the issue was, it's pretty expensive. Nobody had ever had experience with it in Wyoming. And the testimony we got was it probably wasn't going to happen. And so we intentionally, on purpose, took that outside the block grant and put it categorical, that's called. And now today you hear that's one of the rave reviews about our instructional facilities program. Talk to any of our 48 school districts, and they'll talk how valuable the instructional facilitator program is. It would not exist today if it was just tucked away in the block grant. And I think the evidence is pretty clear, because the same thing has happened to tutors. It took us 4 years to finally get Wyoming schools on board with full-day kindergarten. We had to take action and pass a statute to do that. There would still be kids going to half-day kindergarten in this state while we fund it at full day. Classroom sizes. I think we made a huge step forward today. It's all based on research. That's why we're here. And then this big book you have on the school recalibration, all of you have this, right, tucked away behind you. Tab A, page 18, it talks about tutors. The most powerful and effective strategy to help struggling students meet academic standards is individual one-to-one tutoring or tutoring in very small groups provided by licensed teachers. Now, these aren't, these are guys who are best in the field doing an evidence-based, research-based model how to double Wyoming performance. And it goes on to say, if provided appropriately as part of an effective reading program in grades K-2, this extra help strategy can reduce reading failure to less than 2% of students. And then it goes on, researchers have found greater effects when tutoring includes the following mechanism. Number one, professional teachers as tutors. And then it goes down to recommendations. about the funding level staying the same. It says, however, and about this reporting business, we have all the reports. We know exactly who's doing it and who isn't. And you can see about half the tutors are hired throughout the state. But it says, however, our resource allocation and use studies, as well as the WDE's continuing review report, found that many districts do not employ the full number of teaching tutors funded through the model. Consequently, the legislature might want to consider funding this staffing position at the same level, but outside the block grant and through a separate categorical program similar to the way instructional facilitators are funded. So here we are today at a real jumping off point. 5 years ago, it was all about the money. There was attempts in this legislature last year, particularly on the other end of the hall, and the good chairman of education will remember this, and the speaker remembers this, we are just going to look at the money. We're just going to do a desk audit. We're just going to roll this through and not make it too complicated. It was this House demanded accountability be part of the study. It was this House that put on the third reading amendment demanding accountability. We spent a lot of our time, our summer and fall, looking at accountability. So here we are. We're going into our second five-year cycle now with a recalibrated model. When are you going to give us a chance? Because we know it will not happen. It's proven it will not happen. We'll hire half the tutors. But when are we going to take the next step and say we demand this accountability? We demand these results. Because is it going to be just 5 years from now we come back and let's burn down all the teachers, take their tenure away and blame the teachers, blame somebody else? But when are we going to really hold districts and administrators accountable and say, this is research-based, it's proven, and by golly, we have put our money into it, and it's important enough that Wyoming kids do this. And so we're going to have this one little part, along with instructional facilitators, summer school, special ed, transportation. We want you to do this. And so I just don't want to be back here, and I, you know, some of you will be sitting in those same chairs 5 years from now, and you'll go, gosh. And I mean, when are we going to really demand the results? And so let's give ourselves a chance. Let's see if it works. We'll never know unless we do it, or we can just keep funding it and hope we get it done. So with that, I really I appreciate the debate and your attention. It's been very good today. And so, Mr. Speaker, on and for this amendment. Thank you.
Voting on third reading amendment number 8 to House Bill 127. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 8 to House Bill 127 has failed. Representative Division being called. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 8 to House Bill 127, please stand. Plus the two of us. Those opposed, please stand. Third reading amendment number 8 to House Bill 127 has failed. Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we need a break. Holy cow. So I just wanted to take a second to introduce a couple of guys that are awful special to me. And I just want to let you know, first thing, if any of you get ornery with me, I'll have them come down and pull your nose, Mr. Brown. Anyways, the first one, his name is Jason Miller. He's from Lance Creek, Wyoming, if he'll stand up for a second. He is a world champion steer wrestler, and he is traveling all over the United States being a good ambassador for the state of Wyoming. So if you give him a hand. And the gentleman next to him is my brother, Les Shepperson, and he is actually sitting seventh in the world right now and also part of the Cowboy Marketing Program, traveling all over the state representing Wyoming.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move third reading amendment number 9 to House Bill 127. And I'd like to assure the chair that I will not do any harm to the last speaker.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this was a sheet that was handed out before on amendment number 2. And there's a similar sheet now that came out with my initial on it in a 14 that looks like this for amendment number 9. Now, what I wanted to do with this amendment was give some consideration to small districts. And after I looked at amendment number 2, I went through here and did some percentages. And I just can't understand what we're doing. When we make the cuts that are shown on this sheet, that amendment number 2 put in effect, the county with the license plate that's number one in your heart, they're taking a 6% cut. Mine is taking a 22% cut, and I think that's because I have a large school and a small school. And then there are 10 districts in here that take a cut of 50% or more. One of them, the most egregious I think that I can find, has $84,000 under the current law. They're going to take $55,590 away from it, which is 65% of their money that's being taken away. So when I run this on a percentage basis, I can't make it make any sense at all. And what this does is restore the majority of the money, not all of it. So on page 29 at line 16, it would change the ADM number to $24.05. On line 20, it would change that ADM number to $204.38. And on line 24, it would change that number to from 60715 to 60108. And then on line, maybe most importantly, on line 27, it would change that number from 291.90 to 288.98. The other amendment took off $6,247,000. This would put back in all but $300,000+ of that. And it would truly, the ones that are taking a hit on this are the small school districts. I suppose I can argue it either way. I've got one large school and one small school in my district. I think that's why I come out 22% when I take some of these other larger districts, why the percentages just don't fit with the hit that the small districts are taking. So when I looked at those numbers and reconsidered, I brought this amendment to give us another chance to think about that. And if you're troubled by that the way I am, then here's a chance to restore the bulk, not all, but the bulk of the money that was taken from the districts under Amendment 2. With that, Mr. Speaker, I stand for questions.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Rising on and against the amendment, if the body would just stay with me one more time, we're almost there. This is number 9, and we're about finished. I fail to understand the logic, quite frankly, that anyone's being disproportionately damaged, because it's all tied to ADM and it's on a per pupil basis. So if you have a big school or a little school, everyone's going to be hit equally. It's really, really difficult to come up against a handout like this when somebody offers to come back in and benefit every school district in the state, and everybody runs their finger down the list and says, I'm going to get more money for my district. And you know, how do you go up against something like that? It's really kind of an unfair tactic. but I would urge you, I fully anticipate that as we continue to consider this activities funding, we will have an opportunity to conference with the body across the hall. We'll come to some middle ground. That where we're at right now is what the consultants recommended. I'm comfortable with it. It's still very generous, one of the most generous activities funding in the country. But it's, a lot less than what we have right now, I understand. But what we have right now is arguably the most disproportionately skewed portion of the model. And I do appreciate the conversation that we've had today on activities funding. I think it's important. I appreciate the good coach for highlighting the disparities that we do have. It's overfunded, people. There's no question about it. And so I would urge you to stand with me one more time and defeat this amendment.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Proud to stand up and speak in favor of third reading amendment number 9. I mean, who would have thought? But of course, education is important, and we're all here to represent our state and our students in our district. And I can tell you right now that I came here to make a promise to my school districts that I would try and maintain the level of funding to the extent possible. And we came in here being told that we had plenty of money and we could still support our small schools in Wyoming. And our good representative from district number, or the license plate number 1, has made some very passionate remarks over the last couple of weeks about how Wyoming has stood for our small school districts. And we don't like to play strategies and games with funding for these. We stand up for them, not unlike our neighboring states, where they've consolidated. And we can fund them to the extent possible. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, you've all got your goldenrod sitting on your desk today, hot off the press. Now, not too many years ago, we kind of combined our school funding with our school CapCon. Anyway, it doesn't take much to realize that this year we're looking at a surplus just about, it's easy to round this number off to about $500 million that we have in our school accounts available. I would maintain to you that it would be very difficult for any of us to go back and try and explain to our school boards, our school districts, why we singled out activities to come up with a cut of funding for them when clearly we've got the money and why we would want to cut good programs. I mean, I know in my district we're having a hard time buying helmets for some of our sports. We're having a hard time sending our kids around the state. Some of our speech geeks, which I support 100%. And I'll tell you, I'd have a hard time explaining to them why the activities was singled out. And further, that, you know, no matter how this formula was arrived at, of course, and it wasn't arrived at through a summer-long process of discussion and analyzing the numbers. It was just a number thrown out there where, of course, the brunt of this cut is borne on the backs of our small districts. And I'm here to tell you, I stand in support of our small schools. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I stand in support of this amendment as well. We were sitting there reading this amendment, and when we passed it, we looked at each other and said, what did we just do? I don't know how many of you did the same thing, but I know I did. So we got to looking at the numbers, and I think it basically comes down to do we have the money to support these schools with these activities or not? And where do you stand on supporting these schools? I would give credit to the Education Committee for doing hard work, and it's based on fact and whatever, but I would stand in support of this amendment. And I think each one of you are going to have to make a decision on whether you think we have enough money to support it as it is or not. I think it's going to be an individual decision, but thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In looking at the effect of the original amendment, and just some example schools, the school district from the community where I'm from leaves with 90% of their original funding intact. But the school district that the speaker is from leaves with 59% of their funding intact. In other words, they lose 41%. My district loses 10%. The speaker's district loses 41%. The school district in the community where the good representative from Worland was raised leaves with 34% of their funding intact. In other words, they lose 66% of their funding on a per student basis. So what you're doing is you're just penalizing students from small schools from participating in activities. And I guess from that perspective, from being from a big district, it's not a huge deal to me, but it's just not right that we penalize small districts because they live in smaller towns.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As we consider this issue, I just want to share a story that a mother from over the hill sent me in regard to activities. She reported to me that her high school child left, this would have been a week ago Saturday, left at like 4 o'clock in the morning to make an indoor track meet and to save money. They didn't go on Friday night. And then again to save money, they drove home on really bad roads and her child arrived home at 3 o'clock on Sunday morning. So at least the community over the hill feels like it is, and she asked me, who do I call? Like, so here I am to share her story with you. Activities are important to our kids, and I think we need to save the funding for them.
Mr. Speaker, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, you know, yeah, I'm from a very small school district, have some of the smallest schools in the state. And I'm against this amendment. You know, the anecdotal evidence and the story just given to us, I mean, that occurred before we just put that amendment on this morning. You know, there's no amount of money that we can't spend. And I want to just reiterate, you know, we get up here and say, I'm for small schools. Well, of course you are, and of course I am, and of course we all are. And when I hear that there's $500 million in there, you know, That's good, and that sounds like a lot of money. That's half of what we spend in a year on K-12. And if you find yourselves like you did 2 years ago and your school foundation account starts dwindling, the money you just heard was a lot of money, doesn't even fund us for half a year. We spend over $1 billion a year on education. The last thing I'm going to say is the recal committee spent the entire time at each different meeting discussing this very issue. And this was a recommendation of the consultant. And I want to refocus here because it's easy to get up and say, oh, activities are important. Of course they are. That's not a debate. That's not what we're arguing. Small schools are important. Of course they are. We're not arguing that. The question is are certain parts of the model overfunded? Could they use a haircut? Are we all going to be okay if we do that? Yes, we are. It's just like when we debate the school lunch program. People get up and say, well, a child is going to go without a hot lunch. No, they're not. A child is going to go without, we're going to do away with activities with that amendment from this morning. No, we're not. So I just want to refocus the debate to actually what is and what is not. Because we're all on the same page. We're all on the same team. We're all for small schools. We're all for the kids. And we're all for activities. Thank you.
Chairman McComey, for your first time.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. During the interim, excuse me, the committee's all met, and we heard lots of testimony. And what we saw was we asked the consultant to explain where he got his numbers. He explained where he got his numbers, and then the committee chose to continue with what we had, based upon testimony that we received from the districts, and looking at how the consultant came up with what he had, and the consultant did not disagree with us going ahead with the way we were doing it. So I really truly believe that we spent a whole summer and fall on the model, and this is one of the items that we felt was fairly distributed. And the big schools were the ones that came and said, we think we need to do it this way because the other way is punitive towards small school districts. on and for the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? First time? We're on to our second time. Anyone for their second time prior to the sponsor? Chairman Teeters.
Thank you. I just want to thank the body again for the debate. And, you know, you can argue that this was the will of the select committee. The reality is that they didn't have the political will to make any cuts. And the reality also is that there are lots of areas where we could have arguably made cuts. This is a very, very, very small thing. What we ought to do is suggest that the Senate come in and cut the 500 positions that are not currently being filled by the districts and take $60 million right out of this sucker because they're not hiring them. This is tiny and insignificant. And I would encourage you to show a little bit of resolve and a little bit of fiscal restraint and a little bit of common sense and adopt this proposal or defeat this proposal, number 9, so that we can show a little bit of restraint. We will conference with the good body across the hall, come to some middle ground, and everything will be just roses. But I think it's important for us to show a little bit of restraint. Please vote no on the amendment.
All those in favor of third... Oh, are you going to... Go ahead, sorry. You're back there. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In closing, I just say there's a lot of different kinds of haircuts, and the devil's in the details. And there's crew cuts and there's mohawks, and this isn't any crew cut.
Okay. I don't know what that means. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 9 to House Bill 127, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
All those in favor, stand. The amendment fails, or passes, I'm sorry. I do my best, I do my best. Okay, House Bill 127, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel. Brown,
aye.
Burkhart,
aye.
Byrd,
aye.
Campbell,
aye.
Kennedy,
aye.
Childers,
aye.
Connolly,
no.
Kraft,
aye.
Davison,
no.
Davison,
no.
Edmonds,
aye.
Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
yes.
Gay,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Green, Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
no.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparik,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Lubno,
no.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
no.
McComey,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
no.
Peterson,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Simlick,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Ronish,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 53 ayes, 7 no.
House Bill 127, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the House, House Bill 127 has passed the House. Very good debate, everybody. Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 139. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Esquivel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom is referred House Bill 210. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Byrd, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Swanitzer, Dan, Swanitzer, Dave, no, Greer. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
Re-referrals. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to re-refer House Bill 217 to your committee number 2, Appropriations.
It's been moved for re-referral House Bill 217 to committee number 2, Appropriations. Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. We're at that order of business, introduction, reading, and reference of bills. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 249.
House Bill 249, introduced by Representative Nicholas.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to criminal procedure, acceptance of a citation.
House Bill 249 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 254.
House Bill 254, introduced by Representative Throne.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to property taxation.
House Bill 254 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 262.
House Bill 262, introduced by Representative Dan Zwanitzer.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to labor and employment.
House Bill 262 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 265.
House Bill 265, introduced by Representative Barbuto.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to change of name proceedings in district court.
House Bill 265 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 259.
House Bill 259, introduced by Representative Dave Zwanitzer.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to taxation and revenue, ethanol producer tax credit.
House Bill 259 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 261.
House Bill 261, introduced by Representative Madden.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the Department of Transportation, ethanol credit recoupment.
House Bill 261 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 264.
House Bill 264, introduced by Representative Harshman.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to education, Hathaway Scholarship, school notifications.
House Bill 264 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 266.
House Bill 266, introduced by Representative Freeman.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to student assessment.
House Bill 266 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 250.
House Bill 250, introduced by Representative Crone.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to outfitters and guides.
House Bill 250 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 258.
House Bill 258, introduced by Representative Barbuto.
First reading of the
bill. An act relating to game and fish pioneer licenses.
House Bill 258 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 255.
House Bill 255, introduced by Representative Patton.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to veterans tax exemption.
House Bill 255 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 257.
House Bill 257, introduced by Representative Throne.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to popular vote compact.
House Bill 257 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 260.
House Bill 260, introduced by Representative Stubson.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to industrial siting.
House Bill 260 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 263.
House Bill 263, introduced by Representative Dan Zwanitzer.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to children regarding the Wyoming Task Force on Asset Building for Children.
House Bill 263 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, Social Services. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 9.
House Joint Resolution Number 9, introduced by Representative Edmonds.
First reading of the bill.
A joint resolution involving health care freedom.
And House Joint Resolution 9 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, Social Services. We're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As a matter of trivia, as of today, there are 37 House bills that have been assigned to Senate committees. And with the bills that are read in, the House has 37 bills on general file. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move the House resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House is resolved in committee of the whole. Representative Edmonds.
Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 114. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 114, introduced by Representative Escobel, an act relating to insurance premiums, failure to pay. This bill was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Swanitzer, Dan, Swanitzer, Dave, signed Representative Stubson, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that House Committee number 114 be moved for approval, and I also move the Standing Committee Amendment number 1, and I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to the good representative from Albany or Laramie County, and he will explain both the Standing Committee Amendment and the bill.
Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm going to call for the question on the Standing Committee and Amendment because we're talking about a notification here, and it just asks that that notification be electronically or in writing, and call for the question on the amendment.
Question having been called, all those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, no. The amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This bill came to the committee, and they heard some pretty compelling testimony about some issues that were being forwarded to the department and some of these complaints with these types of insurance policies where the employer pays a certain copay, and then out of your check, part of that premium is deducted automatically. And what people were finding is that when they get their paychecks, their stubs still showed that those insurance premiums were being deducted, but when they went to have either a prescription filled or go to a doctor, or in one case it was a major surgery, they found out when they got the bills that the employer had failed to make their share of the premiums. So when you look on the bill, you'll see that on line 1, page 12, the employer or trustee of the fund, which the employer or trustee is deemed the policyholder of the life insurance policy, or where they are the trustee and they pay part of the premiums, that the trustee fails to pay part of those premiums that are routinely paid, the employer or trustee shall notify the beneficiary within 30 days. And then on the second part on page 2, it does the same thing. It says exactly the same thing, except it refers to group disability insurance. And also in the Senate, you're going to see a bill coming through that defines disability insurance as well. That does cover health care coverage. So if there's any questions, I'll call for the question.
Any further questions? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 114 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill 114 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 6. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 6, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to packaging, labeling, and advertising of honey. This bill was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Camel, Eklund, Hunt, Laux, Moniz, Semlek, Swanitzer, Dan. Excused, Davison. Signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Semlek.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 6 do pass. Some of you are going to expect that I'm going to say this is a sweet bill and to get us out of a sticky situation we need to pass it, but I'm not. But what I will tell you is that this area of packaging, labeling, and advertising of honey is now taken care of by the feds, and it's no longer necessary for us to do that in our state statute. So I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Semlek's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 6 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 6 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 145. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 145, introduced by Representative Escobel, an act relating to motor vehicle registration. This bill was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blickery, Camel, Madden, Peterson, Vronish. No, Childers, Miller, Semlek. Excused, Goggles. Signed, Representative Childers, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Childers.
Madam Speaker, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill Number 145 do pass, and I will turn it over to the good representative from this city.
Chairman Childers, I believe we have a standing committee amendment. Would you move that amendment first, please?
Well, I stand corrected. Madam Chairman, I thought I had one standing committee amendment. I will also move the standing committee amendment and explain it. That amendment simply changes it to fit in with the agency that's doing the registration. It changes it from July the 1st to January the 1st.
We are on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Question being called. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment has been adopted. Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I bring you House Bill 145. And also, there's a Committee of the Whole amendment, which moves the date to 65. I was approached by some members from the county to the furthest southwest of this state that their county treasurer wanted 65 days and 60. And that's fine with me. My issue with this legislation was that there was some confusion with vehicle registration, taxing, and timing. They had different dates of when those were due. And sometimes a very subtle change in our law can make the biggest difference, especially when you're dealing with what in most cases is your second biggest investment, your vehicle. You almost have to take out a mortgage to buy a new vehicle anymore. So what we were looking at was spreading out those initial costs, because when you finance a vehicle, your first payment comes due about the same time your taxes were due and your registration was due. And, you know, it's a consumer-friendly issue right here. Is what we're trying to do is give people a better opportunity when they're first starting out with those initial payments on the purchase of new vehicles. So we're moving both those dates out 60 days, and what the Committee of the Whole amendment does is it moves them up to 65 days, and I believe that it still takes care of some of the concerns they have in the southwest part of the state, as well as my concerns. And I'll ask for the question on Committee of the Whole amendment number one.
Just a technical change here. Representative Escobel, your name is not on the Committee of the Whole Amendment, so we need a bringer of the Committee of the Whole Amendment to move the Committee of the Whole Amendment. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 45 and ask for your favorable consideration. The explanation has been given, and it's being brought at the request of our treasurer over in my respective county, and there was logical reasons for that, so I urge the body to support it.
Question being called. We're on standing committee.
Madam Chairman.
Oh, excuse me. Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to hear that logical reason for five more days.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. The logical reason for it is that frequently on out-of-state vehicles that are brought in, they will have 60 days that they have before they have to go to the county treasurer's office and settle up with them. And when they arrive on the 60th day, they can also have a penalty attached to them. So the county treasurer's our county treasurer, at least in my county, has requested 5 more days because it alleviates the penalty provision. They don't want to cause problems for these type of individuals that are really innocent parties to the transaction.
Chairman Nakomi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman. Will this just mean that they'll just show up at 65 days and still be in a penalty? I didn't really understand what it was, the out-of-state and the 60 days and this type thing.
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chairperson, on the 60th day, it would expire that they have for this grace period, and therefore when they go in on the 60th day, they would have the penalty that would be assessed with them on midnight, so they have 5 more days grace period here so that they don't have a penalty that's attached.
Any further discussion on the Committee of the Whole? Representative Reynish.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a little bit different angle on the clarification of that question. And my colleague is absolutely correct, but I would just like to add a little more clarification. If you're out of state, an out-of-state dealer would give a temporary registration that would expire in 60 days. And the feeling that our treasurer had was that those people would wait till the 60 days was up, come in the following day, which was the 61st day, to get their plates, and then they would incur the penalty because the 60 days would expire. And she wanted to have an extra couple days, maybe perhaps for a weekend or something like that. We're not forgiving any taxes. They're still having to pay the sales tax. The registration date on the vehicle and the taxes will not change. So I hope that clarifies it. Thank you.
We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
Committee of the Whole Number 1 has been adopted. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And as I stated before, what I was trying to do was make both of the dates that the tax and registration were due the same, to spread out the initial costs of purchasing a vehicle so that when someone was making their first payment, they wouldn't have to pay their taxes at the same time. What we were finding out here in Laramie County, also another state that borders another state that had that 60 days, was that there was quite a few late fees and penalties that were assessed. In fact, in 2008, there was over $172,000 just in this county within an 11-month period that was collected. So it seemed to me that even at that point, before we started into this recession, that people were not only, one, being confused by the law, but number two, they were having to decide whether or not they were going to pay their taxes or start off paying their vehicle payments on time. So that's my reasoning behind House Bill 145 and the following bill. So I'd call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Childers' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 145 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
House Bill 145 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 146. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 146, introduced by Representative Esquivel, an act relating to vehicle sales and use tax. This bill was referred to Committee number 3, Revenue, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blickery, Camel, Madden, Peterson, Vranish, No, Childers, Miller, Semlek, excused, Goggles, signed, Representative Childers, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Childers.
Madam Chair, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I do so with a recommendation that Bill number 146 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And with the previous bill, same thing on moving the date. And if there's no questions, I'll call for the question.
Question, question.
Question.
Question being called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has been adopted. Chairman Childers.
Madam Chair, I'll now turn the bill over to the good representative from District 41 to explain the bill.
Representative Esquivel.
Madam Childers, Madam Chairman, Chairman Childers, thank you. I'm going to turn the microphone over to the good representative from the Southwest County to explain the Committee of the Whole amendment.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, the same philosophy goes on 146 as on 145. We've extended the period here from 60 to 65 days. Once again, it's a grace period of 5 days. It's been requested because individuals come in on that 60th day fully realizing that they can pay whatever fees or taxes is necessary, but they very well may go past the midnight hour, and so the 5 days is being requested at the request, basically, of our treasurer, and I think it has valid merit. This is the same thing as on House Bill 145. I ask for your favorable consideration. Madam Chairman, I move House Bill 1 to our Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 146.
Committee of the Whole, Number 1, has been moved. Do we have any other questions? Question being called. We're on Committee of the Whole, Number 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And House Bill 146, this deals with the vehicle sales tax. If you look in the bill, you'll see that was due on the 50th day. In the previous bill, it was due on the 45th day. Now they're both with the amendments. They're all due on the 65th day. All for the same reasoning I gave before on House Bill 146, just trying to spread those initial costs out. Call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Childers' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 146 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. House Bill 146 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 66. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 66, introduced by the Select Water Committee, an act relating to water development projects. Funding this bill was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Camel, Davison, Eklund, Hunt, Laux, Moniz, Semlek, Zwanitzer-Dan. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Esquivel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Semlek.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 66 do pass. I will turn the explanation of the bill to one of our members of the Select Water Committee from House District 28.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, this bill does two things. The first thing that it does is it creates, as you can see on page 1, line 16, the Glendore Reservoir account, and that account will be used to transfer some funds to set up an O&M account. They, for those of you, a little history, the North Platte Decree provided Wyoming with an annual allocation of 15,000 acre feet of storage water per year from Glendale Reservoir. We have permanent contracts for 4,400 acre feet, and the state of Wyoming is in the process of negotiating a long-term contract for the remaining 10,600 acre feet. In order to do that, we need to set up an O&M account. Thus, we are setting up an account called the Glendale Reservoir account on page 1. We have done this other times before. If you'll turn over to page 2. Page 2, as a matter of fact, in last year's session, we set up an account for the Pathfinder Reservoir account. And page 2 is a technical correction. At that time, we failed to direct the sale of water from the sale that should go back into the Pathfinder account instead. We directed it back into an account we have set up called the miscellaneous account. So on page 2, line 1, That merely directs that the revenue we receive from the Pathfinder modification goes back into the Pathfinder account that we, in fact, have already set up last year. The balance of the information on page 2, lines 16 through 24, and then on page 3, lines 1 through 5, merely we do this with all the accounts we set up. We indicate that all money received from the any sale of temporary sale of water that we would make from the Glendale account will go back into the Glendale account so that the account basically replenishes itself. We, with the good help of committee number 2, the original amount of money to set up the account was $800,000, and that was transferred from the funding that was set aside back in 2006 to finish help Wyoming meet its obligations with the North Platte Decree. And I would stand for any questions.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Semlich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 66 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 66 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 85. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 85, introduced by Representative McKim, an act relating to teacher contracts, teacher suspensions. This bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Conley, Freeman, Croker, Crone, Laux, Madden, Teeters, signer, Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 85 do pass. And I further move the adoption of Substitute Bill Number 1 and would call for the question on Substitute Bill Number 1 so we may consider the bill.
You've heard the motion. Question being called. All those in favor of Substitute Bill Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Substitute Bill Number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I now turn the bill over to the good representative from the beautiful Star Valley.
Representative McKim.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I bring to you House Bill 85, Substitute Number 1. It's called Teacher Suspension. On this, if you look at Wyoming Statute 217-102, small a, Romanet Number 6, it says suspension of pay means the removal of a teacher from the classroom without termination of the pay of salary pending the outcome of a hearing in accordance with Wyoming Statute 217-110. Which means a teacher committing a serious misconduct requires a hearing before suspension from the classroom. The decision as whether or not you have sufficient evidence to justify a hearing requires an investigation. And all this, the teacher would then remain in the classroom until the investigation is completed and a hearing conducted. This bill allows the teacher to be removed or suspended from the classroom while the investigation and the hearing is going on. And just quickly to look at the bill, if you'll turn to the second page on there, notice that we're in the statute 217-110, and we're looking at section A and B. In A, it simply proposes the following, that the board can suspend or dismiss a teacher. Pursuant to this subsection, the teacher shall be notified of that suspension or dismissal and shall be immediately suspended with pay pending the outcome of the investigation by the superintendent. Then going down to line 7 and 8, it says, following the investigation, the superintendent shall recommend reinstatement or initiate proceedings under subsection B. Once again, and verse on line 10 through 12, a teacher shall not be suspended without pay prior to the outcome of a hearing. Now, dropping down to line 14, we crossed out suspension and dismissal and put following an investigation under subsection A, which is the section above we just talked about of this section. Proceedings under subsection C, which is the hearing one, may be initiated by the superintendent. And then just to clarify this, we went down to line 19 and crossed out some of the language there and clarified it. It says, by delivering to the teacher a written notice of suspension or dismissal, that was crossed out. In line 21 through 24 of page 2, it says, by delivering to the teacher a written notice of the findings and outcome of the investigation conducted by the superintendent. And then it just goes on to says that this is also under subsection C. Once again, on page 3, lines 1 through 3, simply says during the pendency of the proceedings that the teacher shall remain on suspension with pay. And that's just a brief explanation of the bill. No questions. Then I move for adoption and move.
Excuse me. We have one question. Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As I read the bill and try to understand the logic of the authority that is granted by the bill, I just it's not that I'm opposed to the bill, but it would seem to me that on page 2, under section subsection B, we're giving the superintendent more authority than actually the board chair. And it would just it seemed to me that it ought to be swapped the other way around. We ought to get the board chairman in that position of calling on the superintendent to make the investigation and then being the final authority as opposed to what appears to be kind of convoluted in my mind. So perhaps I don't have an amendment prepared, but perhaps the author might consider one on second reading. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
All right, we've called for the question. All those in favor, question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill number 85 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 85 is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 107. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 107, introduced by Representative Botten, an act relating to municipal court jury trials. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne, signed Representative Brown, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Brown.
Madam Chairman, I move that when Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 107 do pass, and I would turn the explanation of the bill over to the sponsor.
Representative Botten.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You may not know it, but 25 years ago, Section 5-6-207 was declared unconstitutional by the high five with the black robes down the block. So this bill would simply correct the first sentence. Yes, we're talking about only one sentence, and I can't wait to see how much time we can debate one sentence. But this bill is intended to conform the standard for right to a jury trial to current law, and that's self-explanatory in the bill. If there are questions, I'll go into great detail. I'll go back into the Magna Carta, if you want to show you the importance of jury trial and whatnot. But I think this cleans up a long overdue correction. This should have been taken care of, added to House Bill 84, all those bills that we were correcting. It seemed like we did that maybe a year ago, but it was only 2 weeks. What, you don't want to hear any more about the... Okay, thank you.
Seeing no further debate and hearing the question, questions being called, all those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill number 107 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill 107 is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 123. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 123, introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to circuit courts. This bill is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne, signed Representative Brown, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Brown.
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 123 do pass, and I will turn the explanation of the bill over to the sponsor.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, and Mr. Chairman. The purpose of this bill is to repeal an unnecessary bonding provision that applies to circuit court judges and magistrates. The bill came about as a result of an audit by the Judicial Department. They discovered that there were varying bond amounts around the state, and that the bonding is no longer required. Circuit court judges and their magistrates do not directly handle money, and to the extent that there is any money that they could somehow be involved with, it's covered by the risk pool. So this is really a cleanup statute, and I believe the fiscal note estimates it would save $13,000 a year. Thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill number 123 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 123 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 167. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 167, introduced by Representative Korberg, an act relating to crimes and offenses regarding modifications of the Castle Doctrine. This bill is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. No, Barbuto, Green. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Brown.
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 167 do pass. And I further move the adoption of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. And for an explanation of the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment, I would turn it over to the bill sponsor.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. House Bill 167, on page 2, lines 3, we have a technical correction. When this bill was passed 2 years ago, the entire bill used the words home or habitation, and on page 3, on page 2, line 3, occupied structure was left in. So this is a technical correction. We've deleted occupied structure and added home and habitation so that it's consistent with the rest of that section in statute. The rest of the bill, starting on page 2, line 8, defines, merely places into statute a definition of habitation as well as home. So the Standing Committee Amendment, Madam Chairman, deletes on page 2, line 10, in the original bill, we had occupied structure, and we deleted the word occupied because in statute, occupied structure is actually defined. So we felt it necessary for there to be no confusion. So the Standing Committee Amendment deletes the words occupied, and then on page 12, after the word including, I'm sorry, page 2, line 12, we added but not limited to, and that is the effect of the Standing Committee Amendment. If there are no questions on the Standing Committee Amendment, I would call for the question.
Question being called. We are on Standing Committee Amendment number 1, corrected copy. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment 1 has passed. We're back on the bill. Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And that really is, in essence, the bill. We have defined what we mean by home and habitation.
Seeing no further debate, question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 167 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 167 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 82. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 82, introduced by Representative Byrd, an act relating to fair employment practices. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Barbuto, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Throne. No, Brechtel, Peasley. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Brown.
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 82 do pass. And for an explanation of the bill, I turn it over to the bill sponsor.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and Mr. Chairman. I bring to you today House Bill 82, Unfair Employment Act Practices. Some of you who were here before will remember this bill. Basically, it goes in and modifies the statutes 27-9-105, A and sub I and sub double I. Basically, the stepping through the bill real quickly to the meat of it, if we go to page 2, line 7, we're basically talking about things that we would discriminate for, and I'll read this to you, to discriminate or retaliate against any person having opposed any employment practice made unlawful under this section or having made a charge, testified, assisted, or participated in any manner in an investigation, proceeding, or hearing underneath this act. Subsection double I pretty much reiterates the whole thing. I bring this to you today because over the last 2 years in this position, I've been approached by no less than 15 people in private employment and in state employment who are in jeopardy of losing their jobs because of their inability to bring to light inappropriate actions by a supervisor, whether it be sexual, racial, or some other discrimination, unlawful practices. So basically what this bill would do would afford some protection to those people who want to bring this to light to the proper authorities. And it's a fairly straightforward and simple bill, and at that I stand for questions.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Excuse me.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I'm sorry, Madam Chairman. I was being whispered at, and I'm not capable of hearing and talking at the same time. Madam Chairman, I have some real concerns about the language of this bill. It says, having made a charge or assisted in both line 9 and 10 and line 21, it seems to me that any employee about to be terminated can make a charge or assist in making a charge, baseless or not, and under the purposes of this statute cannot be disciplined or terminated because it can be considered a retaliation. And so we make that behavior illegal. So is it the sponsor's intention that with this language, we make it nearly impossible to fire anybody for anything if they've assisted by saying, oh, go ahead and make the charge or made a charge?
Representative Byrd.
Madam Chairwoman, thank you. No, that is not the intent of this legislation. It's brought forward to protect those people who are in jeopardy of losing their jobs for turning in a supervisor for violating rules. I have three people that have lost jobs. I have another half dozen that will not come forward. They're talking to me through intermediaries because the fear is real. The overburden of a company and or a state agency in which they work in is prohibitive. The existing personnel departments there doesn't adequately cover this. So this is to facilitate actual real charges, real misconduct by an employer that can be proved.
Representative Botten.
Madam Chairman, I've gotten to know this statute, the Wyoming Fair Employment Practices Act, pretty well over the last 19 years. One of the things it lacks is the ability for anybody to pursue any remedy in court. The sole remedy is administrative. So amending this bill doesn't give a lot of teeth. Most people will find their relief under the federal law, Title VII, the Civil Rights Act, which has anti-retaliation provisions right in it. Now, the difference being that for Title VII, the Civil Rights Act, to apply, you have to have a situation where the employer has 15 or more employees. Our state law is if there's even one or two employees. So the problem is not the retaliation. That's in federal law, too. The problem is the state law really doesn't have any teeth.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. I just would like to say that I've been involved in two or three of these little incidences. And if you go to we found out you try to contact the feds, excuse me, federal people, and they're backed up. It's a log jam. Say, well, maybe in 18 months or 2 years we can hear you, and do these kinds of things. So I just wanted to bring that up. Because it was too bad we don't have something with some teeth in the state law.
Representative Byrd? Are we ready for the Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 82 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
House Bill 82 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 142. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 142, introduced by Representative Connolly, an act relating to discrimination. This bill is referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Throne. No, Brechtel, Nicholas, Peasley. Signed, Representative Brechtel, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Brown.
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 142 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to the sponsor.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Today, friends, I bring you a bill that I believe is both simple and profound. It's simple in that it adds a phrase, sexual orientation and gender identity, to each state statute which has an anti-discrimination clause. To our statute on the qualification of jurors, which says, no citizen shall be excluded from service as a juror on account of race, color, religion, sex, age, national origin, or economic status, it adds sexual orientation or gender identity. To our statute on equal enjoyment of public accommodations and facilities, it says that all persons of good deportment are entitled to the full and equal enjoyment of accommodations, which are public in nature, without any distinction, discrimination, or restriction on account of race, religion, color, sex, or national origin. Again, sexual orientation and gender identity is added to this language, and so on. In each of our statutes, which has an anti-discrimination clause, those regarding appointments to state commissions, access to fair employment and medical services, and education, the phrase sexual orientation and gender identity is added. The bill has what I call in it a Goldilocks provision. It's not too little and it's not too much. It's just right. It doesn't choose one or two of the statutes that have anti-discrimination clauses and add sexual orientation. It doesn't go through our entire state code and put anti-discrimination languages where it could possibly exist. Instead, it's just right that it adds to existing and only those existing statutes with anti-discrimination clauses the phrase sexual orientation and gender identity. So that's the simple part of the bill. Which brings us to the second part of my presentation, the profound part, the part where we must ask, why bring this bill and why should we pass it? In less than 50 years, the way that we as a society have looked at sexual orientation and gender identity has changed significantly, as let's face it, all of us know, having sat here for the past couple of weeks. From shame and secrecy and imprisonment and institutionalization for sexual deviance to an understanding that individuals who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered have been and continue to be valued citizens. But regrettably, what else we know is that GLBT people have been and are the targets of discrimination and that our laws aren't current pace. In fact, I might say that members of the GLBT community are one of the primary targets today of, at times, vicious bigotry. Last fall, I'm sure all of us on this floor remember the horrible, horrid examples of bigotry that led to the suicide and deaths of many of our gay youth. Studies have indicated that GLBT people have been denied employment, housing, equal protection by police, access to health care, or to visit a loved one in the hospital. In fact, folks, we heard some pretty graphic testimony at the committee hearing from one of the agents of one of our state agencies that's tasked with hearing complaints. And what we heard from her is the need to turn away, in this case, a gay individual, and I hate to be this graphic, but it was just one of her examples, who had feces in his lunchbox working on the oil patch because that target of that discrimination was a gay man. She needed to turn him away because sexual orientation and gender identities is not a protected category currently in our employment statutes. And thus, the next step. Our responsibility as a legislative body. Let's be clear, we have acted in the past. Consider once that children under the age 16 worked full-time. They had no voice. They had to accept unreasonable circumstances and conditions because of having no protection. But in 1923, the law changed, and today we cannot imagine having a 10-year-old in a factory. Consider once that women could not vote and the impact that would have on us today if that was still the case. I would guess back then some would say during the debate that these changes in the laws weren't needed. In some ways, maybe that was the case. Why change something that it wasn't a problem for many? But in fact, of course, it was a problem, and we changed the law. Today, there are a group of persons who can easily have no voice due to the absence of it being protected in law. I believe that most Wyomingites agree that sexual orientation and gender identity should not prevent a person from access to fundamental and daily provisions of life. In fact, we hear that over and over and over again. That regardless of sex or age, political party affiliation, everyone believes that discrimination is abhorrent and has no place in Wyoming. Sexual orientation and gender identity shouldn't be a bar or a bonus for getting or keeping a job or visiting a loved one in the hospital. Over and over and over again, Wyomingites, I think, stand firm in that belief. It's also pretty much the law of the land with our private sector partners. 90% of Fortune 500 companies include the phrase sexual orientation and gender identity in their anti-discrimination policies. It's good business. We need to add the phrase to our statutes because regardless of the good intentions of most individuals and our private sector partners, bigotry and discrimination does exist. And perhaps as importantly, because our GLBT citizens know that without provisions such as the one before you, that to make a complaint could fall on deaf ears or even sympathetic ears, like we heard in committee testimony, that have to raise their hands and say, I'm sorry, but we can't help you. But more, perhaps even the most frightening, is that to hear a complaint and to be the victim of then more discrimination. So we need to add the phrase to our statutes. And I know with brief discussion with some of you that you believe that sexual orientation and gender identity is already included in the term sex and gender within our statutes. But know that that isn't the case. The law of the land is clear at this point. We need to add the phrase, or else it's not covered. So what can we do? To make the public's intention clear that discrimination, whether it be at work, selection of jurors, access to services, will not be tolerated based on sexual orientation and gender identity. We're back to the simple part. Modify our anti-discrimination statutes to add the phrase sexual orientation and gender identity. And what you'll see in the bill in front of you is simply going through statute by statute where we have a list of groups that are protected from discrimination, and we add the phrase sexual orientation or gender identity. It begins on page 1 with qualification of a juror, page 2, public accommodations, our general crime section with discrimination. On page 3, we move to the administration of government and the Department of Health with child care facilities at the bottom of the page, and we keep on going. Page 4, with the Defense Forces and Veteran, with right to attend school on page 5, and then on pages 6 with education, and then starting again on page 6, going on to page 7 with fair employment. And I'd be happy to stand for any questions. Thank you.
Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm only going to suggest that this really is not needed, that sex and gender in statute should be sufficient. I guess I just fail to see how we could suggest that there wouldn't be some orientations of sexual preference that we would not necessarily want in policymaking, teaching children, or things like that. And I'm not suggesting singling out any particular group of people, but there are some things that just aren't acceptable. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Botten.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm reserving my comments only to the portion on page 7 of the bill. Again, the Wyoming Fair Employment Practices Act. Now, if you were to lay this state bill on the table and next to it put down Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, you know what you're going to find is different? The state law does not find religious discrimination to be one of those factors included, whereas the federal law does. So it's interesting, first off, that discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation would be recognized, but discrimination on the basis of religion would not be under state law. That's interesting. But let's give it a little more effect. There's a reason why state law does not recognize religious discrimination, and that's because it's formulated slightly different than the federal law. Under federal law, there's an exception for certain religious institutions when it comes to religious discrimination. This is so that a Catholic parish does not have to hire a Buddhist. A Muslim mosque does not have to hire a Jew. This is a recognition that there is there are certain circumstances involving religion that you're not going to be forced as an employer to hire certain people. And why is that? It's called the First Amendment. First Amendment always trumps statute. And so, therefore, the freedom of religion, assembly, and speech allows a religious institution to not hire people that are contrary to their religious dogma. Now, because our state statute has no similar exception, this law, if this bill, if passed and became law, would require certain religious institutions in our state to have to hire people against their religious dogma. Well, that would be a violation of the First Amendment. It would render this thing unconstitutional. Thank you.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I'm kind of curious. I believe in a town going up towards that park in the northwest part of the corner that I won't mention a name, that there was a funeral for a soldier. Even made a movie about it. But I believe that there was a discussion about a certain religious organization, and I hesitate to even call them a church, that was planning on protesting that funeral. They did protest another funeral of the young man that was killed over in Laramie. We passed a law and even revising it again to take care of that, to get them even further away. That's one case. And if somebody would like to come back to my computer and take a look at some of the emails that I've been getting, I'd be happy to tell you that religious discrimination is taking place. First Amendment, no, I don't believe that. But it's discrimination. When they say that somebody is an abomination, uses the Bible to say that, when we've already had discussions a few years ago about how the Bible actually, that particular section mentions any number of things that people believe differently now, but they select this part of it, and no, it's got to remain in there. And my daughter, and I will bring her up into it this time, that she's an abomination. Now, you can't tell me that we can't bring this into play. Now, we're supposed to be held back on things. Okay. I'm more than happy to do that. But explain the emails that I'm getting. I'm getting some that thank me that I'm standing up here and talking about this. Ladies and gentlemen, probably 30 years ago, 40 years ago, I made some of the same jokes. And even further than that, I probably even made some jokes about people that I shouldn't have. But I've learned an awful lot, and I think the majority of the people in this room are old enough to understand what discrimination is. And if they really reach deep in their heart, they know they're wrong. They're wrong about it. We address certain things about the black community and proper decisions about it. And now we're sitting here and we're going to play the same game that we played back then. Same game. And you can't tell me it's not discrimination. Some of the people that have come up to me that don't particularly like what I'm doing, I recognize the look on their face. I grew up recognizing that look. So don't tell me. Don't stand up here and say that it's not discrimination. On and for the bill.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. A couple things. First of all, I've heard often during debates on this particular issue that same-sex partners cannot visit or make treatment decisions for their significant others in the state of Wyoming. That's not true. If you look at Wyoming Statute 3522-406C, it says, if none of the individuals eligible to act as a surrogate in subsection B of this section is reasonably available, an adult who has exhibited special care and concern for the patient, who is familiar with the patient's personal values, and who is reasonably available may act as a surrogate. What does that mean? That means you can act and make treatment decisions, and that's in statute. I will tell you that, and this is my personal point of view, I don't care what you do in the bedroom. I don't think it's any of my business. I judge people as people. And I think that the citizens of the state of Wyoming judge people as people. And I don't think it's a criminal offense or not a criminal offense, whether you line up in school, don't line up in school. I think people are people. And I think that making what you do in the bedroom everybody's business is a disservice to everybody, whether it be sexual orientation or gender identity. That's nobody's business except for the people in the bedroom, and I think that we should leave it that way.
Madam Minority Whip.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think there's been some confusion about what state law, existing state law, covers. If you look at page 7 of the bill, most of which is existing language, you will find that it's illegal for an employer to discriminate against an employee based on creed, that is religion. Kind of an old-fashioned word for it, but it is religion. And so if I change churches tomorrow and lose my job because of it, I think I'd have a claim. The second thing I want to bring to the body's attention with regard to religion is that no religious organization is obligated to, the Supreme Court has held that religious organizations basically have the right to discriminate. They don't have to hire someone covered by this bill if they don't want to. They're in a different category. And finally, in response to the remarks that we just heard, again, focusing on page 7, this is about giving people the ability to go to work and do their jobs and not be discriminated against because of who they are. It's not talking about what they're doing in the bedroom with whom. They could be completely celibate and still be discriminated against. That's not what this is about. It's about people being able to go to work and do their job. And for the second time in committee, we have heard that our state folks who enforce anti-discrimination laws get numerous claims a year based on this type of activity. Really evil, disgusting stuff done to people at work because of their sexual orientation. And our state folks who are there to protect workers can't do a darn thing. That's what this bill is about. It's not about the bedroom. It's not about who you spend time with. It's about who you are, something you can't change, something we call an immutable characteristic, and generally our discrimination laws are supposed to protect those folks. That's what this bill is about. Thank you.
Seeing no further debate, question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill number 142 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
Okay, the chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickrey.
No.
Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
No.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
No.
Edmonds.
No.
Eklund. Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
No.
Gay.
No.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
No.
Green.
Aye.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
No.
Hunt.
No.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
No.
Kasparic.
Aye.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
No.
Lockhart.
Excused.
Lockhart excused. Laux.
No.
Lubno. Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Patton.
No.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen. Pedersen excused. Peterson.
No.
Petrov.
Aye.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlick.
No.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Steward.
Aye.
Stubson. Teeters.
No.
Throne.
Aye.
Vronish.
No.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 25 aye, 33 no, 2 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, House Bill 142, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration...
Madam Chair.
Chairman Childers.
Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
I must apologize to the body for being as passionate as I am about the particular issue. And I did raise my voice, and I was upset. We need to stand on the floor and, or stand at the podium and control ourselves better. and apologize to the committee for that, or the body for that.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 140. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 140, introduced by Representative Roscoe, an act relating to governmental claims, immunity for public transportation. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. No, Brechtel. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Brown.
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 140 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to the representative from House District 11.
Madam Minority Whip.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is a bill that affects the corners of our state, particularly my corner of the state and the northwest corner of the state, and may affect other communities as well. We in our state, particularly in the land of the beautiful mountains, have workers who cross state lines to come to work in our communities. And in northwest Wyoming, there is a bus service run by that community that travels into Idaho and brings workers back into the community. And the difficulty is, while the bus service is in Wyoming, it is covered by our Governmental Claims Act, which means while the governmental entity can be sued if there's an accident, there is a cap on damages. But for the portion of the trip where they travel into Idaho, they, of course, are really not subject to a Governmental Claims Act, or at least it's certainly ambiguous. The purpose of this bill is to create a process that would allow our communities faced by this situation to work cooperatively, assuming cooperation from the other states, to extend governmental immunity to a Wyoming entity for that portion of time while it's in another state. Or in southeast Wyoming, it would be to extend governmental immunity to a public transportation bringing workers into Wyoming from northern Colorado. You know, the borders are just fictional lines drawn on a map. We live in an economy, certainly in this part of the state, that's tied to our friends to the south. And it's really an economic development issue to provide transportation so we can get the workers into our communities we need to do the jobs. And I'd stand for any questions. And also, if there are additional comments from the good speaker, Pro Tem, since he always does a better job explaining this than me.
Seeing no other debate and the question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill Number 140 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 140 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 141. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 141, introduced by Representative Connolly, an act relating to governmental immunity waiver for hospital employees. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Nicholas, Throne. No, Brechtel, Crone, Peasley. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Brown.
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 141 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to the representative from House District 13.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I bring to you a bill that was brought to me by a constituent who works in a nursing home facility, and what he pointed out to me was that after making a valid complaint in violation of what would be called our whistleblower statute, he lost his job. He met with an attorney and was told that he had no claim. He had no ability to bring forth a claim under our current statutes. So what this bill does is turn to our government immunities section of the statute and adds in a provision so that this whistleblower can have his day in court. There's nothing in the statute that says whether or not he would win or lose, and in fact, if he lost, he would lose his job. But if he won, but this would give him his day in court. So, friends, I see this as a technical fix, but an important one for our hospital workers who bring forth a valid claim. And I ask for any questions.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 141 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 141 is passed, the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 177. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 177, introduced by Representative Yagi, an act relating to state holidays and observances, Vietnam and Veterans Welcome Home and Thank You Day. This bill was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Botten, Kennedy, McKim, Peterson, Quarberg, Vronish, Swanitzer, Dave. Signed, Representative Quarberg, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Quarberg.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 177 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And, Madam Chairman, I would like to explain that Standing Committee Amendment and ask for the question before I turn the bill over to my good colleague from House District 18. If you will all turn to page 6. Of the bill, we made some corrections or some changes there. The Standing Committee Amendment on line 5, we deleted the boards of all, so it basically reads organizations to work with Wyoming school districts too. And then on line 6, we deleted proper exercises in observation of the, and we just deleted observe. So basically that section would read that the governor would issue a proclamation requesting proper observance of Wyoming Veterans Welcome Home Day and requesting military and veterans organizations to work with Wyoming school districts to observe the contributions and sacrifices of Vietnam veterans and other veterans. So if there are no questions on the Standing Committee Amendment, I would call for the question.
We are on Standing Committee Amendment number 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has been adopted. Chairman Quarberg.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would like to turn this bill over to my good colleague from House District 18.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could I have privilege the floor?
Proceed.
I'd like all the vets that are here to please stand up, and I think I have Colonel Bartleboard up here, and if there are any other vets in the balcony, I'd like them stand up. If you look at the bill, these guys that are standing are the ones that are co-signers. I'm not a veteran, but I have a soft spot in my heart for these guys. So I'd really appreciate a big thank you for these folks.
The House thanks you for your service. Representative Yagi.
And thank you again. There's two folks that aren't here that I would like to mention. One of them is Lee Alley from Wheatland. He's probably the most decorated Vietnam vet, and I've got all his medals and accolades that he got, and Barry Gastic is also in that same category, and they were not able to be here. We wanted them here today, but the weather and where they live just didn't get them to be. As I mentioned, I'm not a vet, but the more I hear about and see about what's going on in the world today, the unrest, the turmoil, the problems that are there, probably the blood and the death and the terror, I'm really starting to appreciate more and more the United States of America. Which brings me to have the greatest respect for the guys that are presently serving, guys and gals presently serving, and those that have. This, if you'll notice the title of this bill, it is the Vietnam and Veterans Welcome Home and Thank You Day. As our servicemen and women come home today, we have really good, elaborate welcome home ceremonies. The governor's there. We have a lot of dignitaries from the county, from the city, and we appreciate them. Well, I think this group of folks kind of got left out, the Vietnam era, and some of the folks that you had stand up today and we gave a round of applause for were in that category, as these two that I just mentioned. They came home, and one of the things that happened, and by the way, the United States Congress passed a bill honoring the Vietnam folks, and it was Senator Richard Burr. He gave a little speech, and part of that says, "Tragically, when these servicemen returned home, they were caught in a crossfire of public debate about the nation's involvement in the Vietnam War. As a result, these brave men and women never received the welcome home and gratitude they fully deserve." So this bill is a little bit to say thank you to that group of people. And if I could go through the bill with you a little bit, on page 2 and page 3, it talks about the Vietnam War, the number of folks that were there, how many lived, how many were wounded. And if you look on page 4, kind of skipping through this fastly, it talks about the things that we're saying here. And on page 4, on line 14, it also mentions three other groups that kind of got left out, the Korean War, the Gulf War, and the Cold War, and it talks about them a little bit. And so this bill is just to say thank you, and we're trying to do a little more than say thank you. We would like 84109, the Wyoming Veterans Welcome Home Day, trying to proclaim this. On the 29th, the war was officially ended, and they got to come home on March 30th. And so we're trying to have some type of special recognition for this group of veterans, and we've included all veterans on this. And if you look on page 6, the governor, we're trying to get to issue a proclamation requesting proper observance of the Wyoming Veterans Home Welcome Home Day, and requesting military and veterans organizations to work with school districts, and I would suggest school or county commissioners and cities do the same thing. So that's about, in essence, what the bill is. And I've got a lot of things that were in a hurry, so I'll just kind of close down there. So I'd appreciate your consideration for this. I will say I've got some lottery handouts. I don't know how they got in the vets bill, but I've got too many things going. But thank you for listening to this, and I appreciate your consideration for this.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As the old representative from House District 6, you know, the one who did serve carrier duty in Vietnam, 200 missions, I believe, in Vietnam, 1,100 carrier languages or landings. He used to say, let's get this thing cranked up, get her hooked up, light the afterburners, and let's get this bird off the deck.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I certainly commend the representative from House District 18 that brought this legislation. I speak on behalf of many veterans. I served as a combat veteran in the Marine Corps, 1968 and most of 69 in Vietnam. At present time, I'm commander of the Veterans of Foreign Wars over in the Bridger Valley, which is located in Yuna County. We knew this was coming up. We commend the people. We encourage the body to do it. And remember, if it wasn't for a vet, we wouldn't be standing here doing this.
Hearing no other debate, in the sense we want to get this thing lit up, all those in favor of Chairman Korberg's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 177 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 177 is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 186. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 186, introduced by Representative Davis Wanitzer, an act relating to a Wyoming lottery. This bill is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Patton, Roscoe, Shepperson, Stubson, No, Yagi, Croker, signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 186 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I think the good gentleman from House District 9 will probably explain the amendment as he goes through the bill. So we'll let that go, and the gentleman from House District 9 will explain the bill.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Actually, if I may, I would like to go through the amendment first. I would like to thank the committee number 7 for going through this 55-page bill, a page at a time and sometimes a line at a time, and I think they've done a fine job. The House Standing Amendment basically did a couple, three things. One, I had put in a couple things by mistake. So as you're reading through the amendment, we took out any mention to the parimutuel racing. There was a definition there on that, but it was not anywhere else in the bill, nor is it contained in the bill. They did some reworking of the corporation that's taking place. And then on lines, on the second page, lines page 39, lines 13 through 16, I inadvertently put in some stuff about instant lotteries, and we deleted that. The only thing else that we should be aware of that they took out is that we had some money going to the Department of Health for gambling addictions. But if you're in favor of that, do not fret. I will address that when we get to the bill. And, Madam Chairman, if there's no questions on the amendment, I would call for the question.
We are on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Any further debate? Question being called. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm going to try to run through this bill relatively quickly. So if you do have your bill in front of you, on page 2, it basically says the lottery games provide for continuing entertainment. As we go into page 3 through 5, it goes into definitions. Page 6, it sets up a corporation, and by setting up a corporation, this works like the Wyoming Pipeline Authority or the Wyoming Infrastructure. It is a corporation that is an instrumentality of the state. It is not a state agency. There's not state involvement. They're there to serve the best interest of the state, but yet the state doesn't really control them, so it makes for a nice setup. On page 7, it allows the governors to appoint 7 members to the board. As we go through pages 8 through 14, we talk about the duties of that corporation. One of the most important parts of the bill, and one of the reasons that I brought it, is stated on the bottom of page 15 and the top of page 16. And it basically says the game shall include a state lottery or multi-game state lottery, but shall not, I repeat, shall not include instant lottery, scratch-off tickets, or video lotteries. And I wanted to make a mention of that because, to me, that's very important in this bill that's going forward. Pages 16 through 20, it just talks about the employee of the lottery, employees, I'm sorry. Page 22. Page 22 is also a very important feature of this bill, in my opinion. The money goes into a special pot. It goes into the Wyoming Corporation pot. It does not go for any specific purpose. We are not funding the Wildlife Trust Fund. We're not funding highways. We're not funding education. It lets all the money go into a pot. So then we can have a discussion about lottery. And Then later, if this bill passes, we'll be coming with a task force or an interim study determine what to do with the money. So we just want to ignore where the money goes. Let's get this thing set up, go for a year or two, and then we'll talk about who should have it. Now, as I mentioned earlier in the amendment, we pulled out that portion to the health department. And in my opinion, when we get talking about where the money should go, that would come as a very prominent issue in discussing where the money goes. So be aware of that. And I'd like to just repeat, this is not into the general fund. This is into a little thing all by itself. And I would assume some sort of distribution would happen like we have happening in the severance tax and or the federal royalties. Pages 16 through 20 speaks of the employees of the lottery. I mentioned that. Let's see, 21 through 30 deals with the investigation for the integrity of the lottery system vendors. 30 through 49 basically talks about if the corporation decides to have a Wyoming lottery, the rules that would go into there. One important part in that section is if we have a Wyoming lottery, it will allow the retailers a 6% vendor compensation for selling those tickets. And we believe that's very important to make sure they get taken care of, and that's pretty close to what other states have. 49, it basically allows for the corporation that we are going to set up to establish itself and borrow money. Now, please note there's no mention in this bill about money coming out of the general fund to get started up. This corporation will form. It'll go out and find investors. And if it cannot find any investors, the lottery will not happen. But if it does find investors, we feel that the loans that they go out to get the system started will be paid off relatively quickly. But this takes all the burden off the state. We don't have to worry about adding funds or taking funds out to make sure this thing rocks and rolls. 50 through 52, it just kind of allows for reports and audits. And then, of course, the last two pages talks about some exemptions. And I think with that, I guess I would like to mention one other thing. We did have a handout, and it should have just come out. I think there was two or three handouts, but one should say lottery on top. And it should also say House District number 9. It's a four-page. It goes in. Basically, there's only seven states in the U.S. that do not have a multi-game or a state lottery. And a couple of those states actually have other forms of gambling, like the riverboats. And one state does not have a lottery because they have a bunch of things that have these little handles you should pull that go ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. And they feel the lottery would be working against what their main income of the state is. As you go on over to the second page, if you just want to look at of what neighboring states have brought in, there's a small short chart. And I believe it got handed out by another representative, too, so I'm not sure if they're in favor or against the bill, but if you're just curious about Rocky Mountain areas of what they're bringing in. The one thing I would like to bring, this is an LSO report, and LSO on the bottom of page 3 of that four-page handout just basically says that what they believe that we should be bringing in $20 to $40 million a year, and a more precise estimate suggests approximately $34 million. So I'm not sure how they hit that number right on the nose, but there it is. So I think with that, I hope I didn't rush through it too quick, but I would stand for any questions or comments. Thank you.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The question I have for the sponsor here, and I have to confess I didn't find it, but it could have been in here, and that is what kind of protections are in this to assure that we don't get into the, you know, what I call the instant gratification type of gambling. And the reason I think that's important for us to understand is that all of these states that move to the next level, to this video lottery and the on-demand gambling in establishments from one end of the state to the other, that's where your social problems are, and that's where your addiction comes, and this is where you find some real economic impacts that are perverse in nature. And you know, if there was some, you know, I will be the first to admit, in my experience of studying gambling and being involved as an observer through many years since 1989, I guess. the lotteries, they're not habit forming, they're not addictive, they're not, they don't cause bankruptcies, and they don't cause breakups of marriages and bankruptcies and things like that, but the next level invariably does, and does at severe levels. And I also realize that all these instant gratification games like video lottery always start out with the precursor being a lottery system like this. And the people that get addicted to the lottery itself is usually the governments. And that's why it's so easy to move to the next level. They say, man, we could come up with another $100 million. Just think how much we could help people. And if there's any place in here that does give me some assurance that isn't not possible. I mean, there's some vote or something that has to take place on the part of the public to prevent that. I guess I could support what we have here, but not unless it has that. Thank you.
To ensure that we have vigorous debate, body, I just want to let you know that I'm going to go ahead and take general questions on the bill first, and then we'll split between those speaking against the bill and those speaking in favor of the bill. Any general questions for the sponsor of the bill? Other than the one that was just asked.
Madam Chairman.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I may also have missed this. I saw some pretty standard reporting procedures, but who keeps the corporation legal?
Further general questions. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. One of the questions I have is I reviewed through the bill. I saw no provision in there for anything on compulsive gamblers, Gamblers Anonymous, any of those social ills that result from gambling and lottery activities.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Just one thing that I wanted to clarify, I'll speak to the bill a little bit later, but when it's mentioned the revenue from this, that number that was mentioned of $34 million is gross revenue before any of the prizes are paid out, any of the expenses are paid out. The state to the north of us has gross revenues of $41 million, and their net proceeds available to the state are $11 million. So that $34 million figure, when you're thinking about it as far as what money is going to come into the state, is probably more in the $7 to $8 million range. I just want to make sure that was clarified so we're talking about the correct numbers here.
Representative Peasley.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I would just pose one question to the bringer of the bill, and I guess this is to help me work this out in my head. We exercised our police power as the state of Wyoming to make gambling illegal, and we did it for all those right purposes and made it illegal. And now we want to bring it back and profit from what we formerly called a vice or a bad thing. How do I explain that to my constituents, that one thing that we said you can't do because it's bad for you, now you can do because the state regulates it? Thank you.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Try to get all my papers here straight. On the back of the handout that I handed out, just a two-page, it does have where different states have put their lottery proceeds. So I think that's just general information. And the idea that the lottery is going to bring a vast amount of money sounds pretty good, but it's really going to bring in the extra money like the tourism does. I would suggest there's a lot of things we need to consider before we accept the idea as kind of a golden egg that's going to create all kinds of income, and education is usually the one that says we're going to give it to this one. It's interesting to note that New York State, and this one was supposed to generated millions of dollars for education. The revenues aren't paying off nearly as much as they anticipated. And Nevada's economy is kind of based on the gambling. And in the last couple of years, they've really taken a downturn in the income that they've had. Also on the back of the second sheet that I gave you, there's a little, it's entitled A. It shows you states that are not quite doing as good as you would have believed, that just the lottery is just going to bring in lots and lots of money. There's some problems there and some downturns that have been going on. Talking about the newly formed lottery corporation, those nine members will be appointed by the governor, and they'll have a vice president and a CEO. They'll have secretary, treasurers. And they will establish how the gambling will be set up around the state. And they will, even though it's not a government agency, they will have reports, there'll be studies, the state has oversight. So there is going to be another bit of bureaucracy established. In one of the testimonies that we heard, we talked about Georgia and Arkansas and the amount of money that they're bringing in. And I think it's a little unfair. Georgia has a population of about 9.6 million, and we have over 500,000. Their people that surround the state are 35.5 million, and we have 10.9 million around us. And Georgia has 60,000 square miles. We have about 100,000 square miles. So we have a lot less people and a lot more area to draw from. And again, I would suggest with our over 500,000 people, if half of those are going to gamble, that's 250,000. If half of those, half of age, that limits it to 250,000. Half of that half is 125,000. So I think that's the number we're looking at to bring in the estimated $10 or $11 million. I don't think it takes much research to show that the state-sponsored lottery doesn't benefit the people and protect the good and safety of society. It hurts them. The cost of the state-sponsored lottery in terms of human terms, the morale, is extremely high. I would point out that many studies have shown lotteries are simply regressive taxation, although it's a voluntary type of tax. And new studies have shown that the poor disproportionately bear the heavy burden of the lottery. In order for the lotteries to survive, they must cannibalize the other parts of our economy, encouraging people to gamble money they otherwise would have spent on businesses that already exist in Wyoming. Another study shows that problem gamblers cost the nation about $715 annually in social services and law enforcement, and that goes high for the real serious ones. And I think the real victims are the children in homes of gambling parents who spend the money that they should be spending for food, rent, clothes, as they're trying to get a false hope and kind of strike it rich. The amount of money that's going to bring in, if you'll look at table one and just kind of do a little bit of interpreting from there, you need to bring in 3 or 4 or 5 times the amount of money to get $1 back. So when we're talking about getting $10 million for this corporation to be used by us, you're going to have to raise $30, $40, $50 million, again, with that small population. I just really wonder if we're headed in the right direction. And the U.S. attorney released a memorandum in response to the findings that U.S. law allowing state lotteries requires that the state exercise actual control over all significant business decisions made by the lottery enterprise. And that, again, sets up a little more bureaucracy than I think we want. Article 7, Section 20 of the Wyoming Constitution says it's the duty of the legislature to protect and promote the health and morality of the people. So I question bringing and supporting this bill. Can the lottery actually generate the $30, $40, $50 million on the backs of the people that probably can't afford to give it to get the $10 million that's being talked about? So I'm just merely trying to help educate you and give you some information so we can make a decision to defeat this regressive form of taxation and not saddle our state with a new industry that has the likelihood to present as many problems as we're trying to solve. Thank you.
I'm going to go ahead and let the sponsor of the bill answer the general questions before we continue debate. Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to answer a few of the questions before we get too snowballed. From the fine representative from House District 40, all I could suggest to you that this is just straight multi-ball lottery. It specifically says no instant gratification, which means no instant lotteries, no scratch tickets, no parimutuel racing, none of those things. So I think as we look at this bill, it's hard for me to imagine to have somebody to go down and just keep every night buying another Powerball lottery ticket. I can see that if scratch tickets come available and whatever, and you're down there trying to get that instant gratification. I think what this bill does is more give you a lot of hope. A lot of people love playing lottery for the hope that they're going to win. And let me remind you on page 2 that the bill basically says this is for entertainment. To the fine representative from House District 28, who asked who regulates the corporation, they are to report to the governor. It does have an audit built into it that they have to be audited to make sure they're on even keel, and that corporation being an instrumentality of the state, we have the right, in my thoughts, to shut that down anytime that we so desire. To the fine person from 19, who was talking about the compulsions for gambling, and I trust that already got answered. And if not, shoot it at me one more time. From House District 3, about how do we condone the badness? Well, for those of you who think it's really bad, then you could use that as an example to teach your siblings that, gosh, this is what you do not want to do. But realize we have a lot of things in the world. Is consumption of alcohol good or bad? Is visiting folks that roam the street in the middle of the night good or bad? So you have to use that. It has to be a one of those personal issues. And from the former speaker that was just here, folks, this is not the golden goose for the state of Wyoming. This is not going to bail us out of any deficit. This is simply for entertainment. If the corporation is not able to stay above water, it just goes under. There is no liability to the state of Wyoming. Let me remind you that the study that he referenced was done by the LSO. It was not done by any outside lobbying group or myself. It is what they've done based on their research. And the other thing that I think is real important, he did mention that we are a state of only 500,000. But do you realize that we have between 8 and 9 million people that visit this state every year? We have the first national park in the country here. We have the first national monument here. We have an interstate that carries people day and night. When I was a kid, it was like, wow, there's somebody on the interstate. I see some headlights coming. Now it's, oh, my gosh. How am I ever going to get passed around these cars? So there is a tremendous amount of folks that are coming in. It is my belief that they will participate in this lottery, keep it going. If it only makes $3 or $4 million, it only makes $3 or $4 million. If it makes $40, $50 million, it makes $40, $50 million. That's one of the reasons we want to put this money into pot, see what it does. If the legislature says, wow, this is only bringing in $2 million, then we have the option to shut that down. And I hope that I've answered the questions. Thank you.
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. To reiterate what my good friend from District 18 said, thank you for quoting Article 7 of the Constitution, Section 20 of that article says the duty of legislature to protect, promote the vital interests by such measures as the encouragement of temperance and virtue and such restrictions on vice and immorality of every sort. In answer to my other good friend from House District 3, the definition of temperance is self-restraint in the face of temptation or desire. Thank you.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd just like to make a point here in front of this body that there's a location that's about 9 miles south of this location where we're at right now that last year sold $2.8 million worth of lotto tickets. And since the Wyoming and Cheyenne, or this city is the metro area that it primarily serves, I would assume that a sizable amount of that money came out of this community. Now, I feel for my brethren on the other parts of the state that don't have access to any of this, but it's a game. We're all adults. You know, what I hear is coming out of here is we're trying to make rules, wrap everything around, and tie everybody up here, telling everybody what they can do, what they can't do. You know, a lot of people in this body got up and they told the public that they're going to try to draw back what the government does, get them out of their lives. You know, I think this is a good place to start. Let these people that would like this in this state have a little fun.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to respond a little bit more to the questions about the scope of games allowed under this bill, specifically from the good representative from Johnson County. And it just it plays in with what the Standing Committee did in its amendment. And on page 15, the bottom of page 15 is the description of what is and is not allowed under this bill. And it was further limited by the Standing Committee. It initially was an inclusive definition that did not limit it to or potentially did not limit it to just a state lottery or multi-state lottery, but we amended that section so it says it shall only include a state lottery or multi-state lottery. So the way the bill is now, if you want to do anything other than that, you would have to come back to this body, have a vote on that, and amend the statute to empower that to happen. So just to clarify the scope of what the bill does address.
Representative McKim.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm just, as I read this top part of this handout here, it says there are 43 states are authorized to do state lotteries and 7 of them aren't. And my only comment was that I hope that Wyoming is one of those that still remains in that position to resist a lottery. Let's be unique in our own way. Thank you.
Chairman Kornberg.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman, and I guess I'm going to have to beg your indulgence because I still have a lot of questions the more I read through this bill, so I can either ask them now or some appropriate time you can open it back up to more questions. I need for someone in the body to explain to me what it means to be an instrumentality of the state. So I need some clarification on that. That's on page 6, line 12. I'd also like to know what you're considering on page 6, line 20, what a prominent person would be. And then I want some additional explanation on page 13, because page 13, lines 2 through 5, give this corporation, which is not a state agency, it's not a public corporation, rather it's an instrumentality of the state, to enter into contracts to incur debt, and they can also enter into financing agreements with the state, agencies, or instrumentalities of the state. So, I mean, I need to understand how if they enter into debt and they can't pay the debt back, what exactly that means if they've entered into financing agreements with the state, agencies, or instrumentalities of the state. My logic is telling me somehow then the state's not going to get their money back. And then I also want everyone to understand the significance of this piece of legislation on page 13, lines 7 through 11. This is a very powerful, powerful corporation. So understand that. They can administer oaths. They can take depositions. They can issue subpoenas. So understand this, we are creating a very powerful corporation. And then my last question, Madam Chairman, is on page 14, lines 1 through 4. It also says that they can enter into contracts or agreements with state or local law enforcement agencies for the performance of law enforcement. So I'm kind of wondering what that might be all about. I guess if a retailer isn't handling his ticket sales correctly, do they have the authority to direct local law enforcement if they've entered into a contract to go out and, I'm not sure, do what with the retailer? Take his tickets away from him, I guess. I don't know. So thank you, Madam Chairman.
To answer those questions, Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I will do my best. I was hoping one of the attorneys would come up and explain to you what an instrumentality of the estate is. And I'm not sure. Would you take that on? Could I turn that over? Thank you.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had some conversation about this in the standing committee, and really the instrumentality of a state is very similar to other institutions we have, like the WCDA, the pipeline authorities, the infrastructure authorities, and these are, they are not agencies of the state, and so they cannot come and apply, for example, for general fund appropriations. So it's sort of this hybrid entity that is created by the state but not a part of the state government. So hopefully that's obtuse enough to get you through.
Representative Zwanitzer.
And thank you, Madam Chairman. I appreciate that. The other thing that you should be aware of, they are there for the benefit of the state, not for the detriment of the state, but all of these type of instrumentalities are here for the benefit of the state of Wyoming. Thank you.
Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just want to bring up a couple points, and I hope everybody keeps in mind that you never get something for nothing. And that's what we're proposing here, as much as I can see. But several years ago, we had a study done on the lottery, and we had the national lottery people come in and advise us. And the advice they gave us was, we haven't got the population to continue to have a lottery continue. They estimated that we might make $12 million. $3 or $4 million of that is going to go to getting set up. $3 or $4 million is going to go to the national organization. $3 or $4 million is going to go for the upkeep. And 2% of the people probably would be addicted. And so the last $3 million would be going for all of those agencies, the law enforcement, the welfare projects. And you know who usually gambles or does the lottery are the people that are low income. So we have to pick up all of that. I don't think that we're going to be making a lot of money. And right now in these economic times, the lottery sales in these other states are down. But the fees haven't dropped. The fees are still the same. I visited with some folks from Colorado not too long ago, and they feel that the problems outweigh the benefits. As far as looking at a program that we're talking about isn't going to be state-funded, how many programs has this body seen that has gone defunct? And where do they go to get money to keep going? I think we all know it boils down to they come back here and want us to help. And I hope we'll all keep this in mind. Thank you.
Representative Croker.
Thank you. I just wanted to quickly speak on and against the bill, basically on the principle that as a state we have said that gambling is illegal in the sense that we do not allow casinos and other things to operate. And in states where they do allow casinos and other games, the house take as a percentage is very small. It's normally between 1% and 5% as a house advantage. There is one casino game that is close to a lottery, and that is Keno, and the house take is 25%, which means 75% is paid back to customers. But then we're proposing a lottery that would only pay back 45% of the take to customers, and to me it just kind of strikes me as grossly unfair that we would have a game that if it were tried to be run at a casino would be shut down for being unfair, but we can say, well, the government can do it to the people. If you look at the numbers, my conclusion on this is basically when a state or government implements a lottery, they're effectively taxing stupidity, and I don't want to be a part of taxing stupidity. That isn't why I was elected, and that's not why I'm here.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd just like to remind everybody, this is lottery or multi-state lottery. In the center part of the state, there's an area where there is different kinds of gambling. And we get nothing, absolutely nothing from that area because we said we don't want anything. We don't want to gamble. We don't want anything. We had a chief executive officer that dug in his heels. Those folks in the center of the state figured out how to do it. I think they're going to build another one just south of the Hot Springs town. So we're playing games here, folks. We're saying that we don't want a lottery. We don't want a multi-state lottery. But yet we've allowed, the federal government allowed, in our own state, all kinds of casino-type gambling.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I certainly appreciate the opportunity to address the body. I'm adamant against this proposed legislation. I direct your attention to page 23. We look at lines 6 and 7 in there. There's a question here about the legislature maybe appropriating funds if things go wrong. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I sat 4 years on the JAEC, and this is not something that we want to bring in here. But you look at lines 6, 7, and 8, it's talking about that could easily happen. And we talked about the instrumentality of the government. The common people out there that's going to be subjected to this, if it does pass, are going to look at this and says, oh, wait a minute, Wyoming, we have something here that Wyoming condones, perhaps, because they have passed it through the legislature and things are going. Not only that, we set up the corporation and we're moving out. So don't worry about it. Let's take and jump into this thing, fully realizing the pitfall that's here, that this instrumentality is not a state agency. It's not something that has the surety and the good faith and credit of the state of Wyoming behind it. It's based upon revenue and fleecing is the best way I can describe this. If you look at page 36, let's talk about another entity here. We talk about in this bill you have to be 18 years of age to purchase these tickets, but you look at line 14. 18 years of age or older for the purpose of making a gift to any person of any age. Now, think of that just a minute. I walk in and buy a lottery ticket. I'm a little bit over 18 years of age. And I take it over and I says, well, look, we're having a good time here. Let me give this to you, but I know you're 16. It doesn't matter. It doesn't violate the law. But what it does feed onto somebody that's under 18 years of age, an opportunity to move forward. Now, if you'll think with me on the purchase of tobacco products, you have to be carded, you have to be shown. We watch that. We send individuals in to test these entities that you shall not sell below a certain specified age. This, folks, goes right in contravention of the policy that we're looking at here along those lines. Page 44. Yeah, get it open here. If I can get the right page up here. Page 44, looking at line 12. This is what is perhaps most disturbing. We go to the people that are going to market these lottery tickets, and that's all well and good because this whole thing throughout it is replete with background checks, investigations, on and on and on. And there's a reason why, because the whole thing is subject to abuse. But you look at line 12, it shall be an affirmative defense to a charge of a violation in this section that the retailer reasonably in good faith relied upon representations of proof of age in making the sale. What does that mean? Does it mean that I have to take and prove all the time that I deed and how things are going? This is pretty loose, folks. I can submit you from a legal viewpoint on lines 12, 13, 14, 15, that even if we find someone that violates these provisions, the problem of assessing a penalty is very remote. Now, the thing that I'd like to address that's peculiar to my legislative district is found on the back page. It's called the fiscal note. And if you look at just before this black box that we have here, and I'll read now. According to the Parimutuel Commission, this bill will likely result in a decrease in revenues to the Wyoming Breeders Award Fund and the Parimutuel Commission due to Parimutuel bettors switching to the personal lottery. Ladies and gentlemen, I've stood on this floor before when we've had lottery bills, and it's come up where the proceeds are either going to go to education, they're going to game and fish, they're going to the Parimutuel type stuff. Nothing is mentioned in here about that, but I can assure you Wyoming Downs, it's my legislative district, is struggling right now. We're trying to make an entity that is alive and well. It's horse racing, it's tradition in the state of Wyoming. Now, if we're going to cut their legs off by running a lottery-type situation here, I submit to you we have an existing business. We know what we're doing out there. And this is going right in the face of what we're attempting to do. The final element I'd like to raise, I do not see anywhere in this legislation or any answer to problem gamblers what kind of remediation action we can take for rehabilitation of these kind of individuals. Because as you travel through areas that are heavily involved with gambling enterprises, one sign says, go to this place and gamble. The next sign says, problem gamblers, go to this other place. So you can go either way. You can choose. This one has no provision here, but I can assure you we will have problem gamblers. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You know, this looks like it's attempting to be a revenue-generating bill. I don't think we have a revenue shortfall in this state right now. You know, in fact, I looked down through the states here, the listing of the states that actually have this, California, Connecticut, Illinois, New Jersey, you know, their fiscal house is not in the best of order. Again, I just don't know why a government entity would want to get involved in the gambling business that goes after the vulnerable in society. It's just a horrible statement for a state to make, especially when we're sitting on this literally hundreds of millions of dollars of excess revenues right now that we can't figure out how to spend. I guess we do figure out how to spend. We always spend it. I don't know how wisely we spend it. But, you know, we've had this bill a number of times. I think that comment I made from the gentleman from House District 6 about the carrier thing taken off of the afterburners, I think it was actually on the lotto bill a few years ago when he was trying to push it. But I think we need to squelch the afterburners on this one and put her back in the hangar.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll not mention that the owner of Wyoming Downs actually had called one of our members on the floor and said that he would support the lottery. So I think we do have some information there that's more up to date. The other thing is, if it hasn't been mentioned, at least two different votes of the people in the state say that they want it. I know people from the little town in where the hot springs are that they have a group that goes up to the first town across the border in that other state to the north. I'm getting good at this. They invest $400 a month on lottery tickets, and it has been mentioned about one of the biggest sales point in Colorado just across the border. Now, I wonder why. And, you know, this is an issue. We've worked on it five different times and come close each time. Now, whether people can say that justifies killing it? I don't think so. I think eventually we're going to have to recognize that the people in this state want it. It doesn't make a lot of money, but at least makes enough to pay those bills. And then some. And we can take care of the problem gamblers that people are talking about. People in the state want it. Why don't we go ahead and give it to them? This is an issue. It doesn't compare to the issue we just got through talking about a while ago. It's not the same thing. But this particular issue is that people want it. It's on and for the bill.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just like to clarify a few things. This is an issue that I've worked on for a number of years, as most of you know, and I am strongly in support of this effort as it's been presented here today. I want to let you know that this bill is modeled after the legislation, the Georgia model, and it was formed some 17 years ago by a infamous or famous governor who was of the Democratic ilk, who supported a presidential candidate of the other party and was well known for that. But one of the main things that he did there is that he established this exact scenario with a corporation, quasi-state corporation. The beauty of this is that it requires zero state dollars, no state appropriations, and actually in the bill it says that no state dollars can ever be appropriated for this. If it disappears, it disappears, but it stands or dies on its own merits. When they implemented this program, they gave that corporation, which was appointed by the governor, the power to, as this bill does, go out and acquire the financing that they needed to implement it. They borrowed $18 million. They started selling tickets, and they paid off the entire loan in 7 days. Since that time, the proceeds that they have used for their state have put 1.2 million kids through college on a scholarship program very similar to our Hathaway, and it has provided the funding for their entire four-year-old early childhood education, and it's contributed literally billions of dollars in computer technology and things to their schools. And all of these things were supplemental. They didn't fund the education system itself. So I love this idea because it's a way to raise revenue for good purposes without raising taxes. And to answer the criticism that this is regressive, I would point to a 2004 Harvard University study that shows that lotteries, and here we're talking about, as exactly in this bill, a situation that does not include instant gratification, that lotteries turn from regressive to progressive as the prizes get larger. In other words, as the jackpots grow, the percentage of people who are purchasing tickets changes from low-income, low-education to high-income, highly educated people at those levels. So that argument doesn't really stand. The other thing that I would like to point out is, you know, if you just take a quick look at one of the handouts, which was describing the declining revenues, Yeah, they might be declining, but they're still producing a lot of revenue for those states. If you just look at the first one on the list, which is the left coast state, they're still making over $1 billion. Second one down, $120 million. That's the state just to the south of us. Similar numbers all the way down. So, you know, our retailers are in support of this legislation because they know how much we're losing out all directions from the state. When a couple of carloads of people from my tiny community travel north every once in a while to purchase tickets in the state to the north of us, they don't just purchase tickets. They stay overnight. They go out to dinner. They do their shopping. They do a lot of other things. So we're losing a lot in this state as a result of not having this here. Finally, one of the things that was brought up on one of the handouts, and I think in the testimony, was a claim that it causes, that the lottery causes a higher suicide rate and a higher incidence of mental illness and problems, mental problems. So according to the National Alliance of Mental Illness, if you look at the state-to-state numbers from 2007, which are the most recently available numbers, of the five highest suicide rate states, three of them don't have any state lottery at all, including Wyoming. Utah, which has no lottery or gaming of any kind, has the 15th highest suicide rate. Of the 10 lowest suicide rate states, all of them have a state lottery. So, given these numbers, if the lottery has any correlation at all, it would seem to reduce suicides rather than to increase them. And I think that, honestly, my personal opinion is there is no relationship at all. I mean, drawing a correlation like that makes about as much sense as between milk consumption and car crashes.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It was just recently mentioned that there's nothing in the bill that had anything to do for any restitution of compulsory gambling or such a disorder. I just wanted to point out that the committee is at fault or blame for that absence. If you would look on page 41, lines 2, it stated a portion of unclaimed prize money not to exceed $200,000 annually shall be paid from the corporation to the Department of Health for the treatment of compulsive gambling disorder, et cetera. That was eliminated, if you'll care to. Look on line 25, page 2 of the amendment, where that was deleted. I just want to explain that the committee in working the bill took pretty much the philosophy that whatever funds that were generated for the state lottery account were at the disposition of the legislature. We did not try to funnel anything off to any aside. We didn't try to piggyback anything on anybody else's good nature, but rather that we would leave everything as that we could identify that was in the original bill to go into the general fund of the state of Wyoming for the disposition, whatever you wanted to do as a state legislature those years in the future. So the authors, if it's necessary to apologize, I guess that was our position in trying to work the bill into something palatable to be presented.
Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I don't imagine there's probably not a lot that hasn't been already said. There's been studies that certainly suggest that gambling is not a healthy thing for our state, and I'm rising obviously against this bill. But I would like to respond to one question that was suggested by one representative who mentioned the potential of moving towards a more instant gratification type of gambling. And I would suggest that in a city to the east of us where the wood is not so alive, it had moved that direction. As when it was first started out, there was $5 on the table bets with the suggestion that this would preserve the historical value of the city, and it was just to be just kind of a fun thing. Look at that city today and how it's changed, and that kind of comes close to home for me. Many of the people that I know that still live in that area have suggested that they would never have approved this sort of a thing if they realized what was going to happen to their hometown. This is, I believe, is kind of like the camel's nose under the edge of the tent. And one person that a very dear friend of mine that worked in the public school system testified one time that with the startup of that gambling in that particular town, it was noted that there was quite an increase in need of the breakfast program, suggesting that as gambling grew, so did the lack of responsibility for feeding kids. So I rise in opposition to this bill. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've often heard the phrase that you may or may not have a dog in this fight. My dog is sort of like a coin. It's two sides. One side of that coin provides about 800 jobs to the community that I represent. Those 800 jobs provide children with opportunities, homes with opportunities. They provide a livable wage at about $10.50 an hour. Middle management opportunities, it does those things. That's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is it's a business decision for those folks in that area to eliminate competition. And to them, a lottery is a competition. And I do represent that constituency in that area. I have seen the gambling, so to speak, symptoms on both sides of the fence. And whether we like it or not, people in this state go to the state to the south. They go to the state to the east of us and the north of us. And that economic leakage is present. And my personal, my legislative opinion is that we ought to give this a try and let it work or not work. Let it survive on its own merits and give it a chance. Because I do know many people in Wyoming, they're silent on this issue, but they do participate. They do recreate in that manner. And I would tell you that although there are these notions that there is the gambling evils out there, I would tell you the other side of that coin is that I've seen prosperity in my community. Whether or not this makes $1 billion or $1 million, I think the point is we want to provide something for the state of Wyoming and those folks that want to participate on affordability.
Any other debate? Representative Zwanitzer for maybe his last and final time.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Of course, it is open debate, but I do appreciate all the comments, all the debate that we've had up to this point. I would like to point out a few things before we go to the vote, and a couple of them I feel I need to answer some questions, and I will apologize ahead of time that I didn't write down all the districts of all the people. But just be aware that we have tons of money leaving the state of Wyoming going across the borders. We heard some testimony about that. And people are in favor of the lottery. We just had a recent survey of the people, state of Wyoming, and it was determined that 63% of the population of the state of Wyoming would like to have a lottery in this state. And so when they go to have that lottery, remember, they're going to buy other stuff. And specifically to the pari-mutuel part of the state that have lost some of those races. If we're able to offer power lottery, I think you'll see a lot of people crossing the state lines of the state to the west of us and come into that tiny community, buy those Powerball tickets, buy those state lottery tickets. I think you'll see a shift of money coming in there. I think you'll see a little bit of bang there for your economy in that particular area. If you read the fiscal notes, you'll notice that they're estimating that they're going to have to run 3,667 criminal background checks. Folks, that's going to put some people to work. Believe it or not. That includes the retailers, obviously, and some of the folks in the Lottery Corporation. In reply to the fact that Colorado is not happy with their lottery, I think if you go check with their state parks, I think you'll find they're just ecstatic about it. I mean, they have been able to build so many new projects down there in their national forests and their state parks. I think that all those folks involved in that area would be 100% on it. Let me remind you, it's not a state agency. Let me remind you that we already have casinos in the center of the state. There is gambling in the state of Wyoming. And let's see, what else can I say? The one other little thing I want to bring up, remediation. It was brought up that they did pull out of the bill as far as remediation for Gamblers Anonymous. The thought in the committee was that we were going to send a couple hundred thousand or whatever to the Department of Health. They thought it needed to be directed towards something more specific. And remember, when this money goes into a big pot, we'll be able to pull some money out of there to address those needs. And with that, Madam Chairman, I appreciate the conversation, and I would call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Illoway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill number 186 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, the voice having failed a voice vote, a standing vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. House Bill 186 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Good work this afternoon, brothers and sisters of the 61st. You just helped the good chair from House District 12 eclipse the record held by the good representative from House District 55 by dealing with 15 bills today as opposed to his record of 14. Congratulations. And with that, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
Clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 114, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 6, recommended do pass. House Bill 145, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 146, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 66, recommended do pass. House Bill 85, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 107, recommended do pass. House Bill 123, recommended do pass. House Bill 167, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 82, recommended do pass. House Bill 142, following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 140, recommended do pass. House Bill 141, recommended do pass. House Bill 177, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 186, amended, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Edmonds, Chairman.
Representative Edmonds.
Mr. Speaker, I move adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10. Labor will meet in about five.
Chairman Harvey, we've still got some business to attend to. So.
Okay.
The next order of business will be standing committee reports.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 187, respectfully recommends that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Brechtel, Kennedy, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Throne, No, Peasley, Excused, Nicholas, signed Representative Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 153, recommends that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blickery, Camel, Childers, Goggles, Madden, Miller, Peterson, Semlek, Vronish, signed Representative Childers, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 155, respectfully reports same back to the House recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, signed Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 179, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yeagy, Patton, Roscoe, Shepperson, Stubson, No, Croker, signed Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 197, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Byrd, Illaway, Yeagy, Patton, Roscoe, Stubson, No, Blickery, Croker, Shepperson, signed Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 206, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yeagy, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Shepperson, Stubson, signed Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 209, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yeagy, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Shepperson, No, Stubson, signed Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 211, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yeagy, Croker, Patton, Shepperson, Stubson, Excused, Roscoe, signed Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 131. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred House Bill 193, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Kraft, Gay, Gingrey, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller, Peasley. Signed, Representing Miller, Vice Chairman.
We're at that order of business. Messages from the Senate.
Message 170. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 2, State Treasurer Reports. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 171. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 48, Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust Account Board. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 79, Recreation Safety Act Waiver on behalf of minors. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 173. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 110, School Facilities Commission Reorganization. Ayes 29, noes 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 174. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 115, DUI Child Endangerment Fines. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 175. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 120, Workforce Services and Employment Reorganization. Ayes 29, noes 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 176. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 25, Long-Term Services and Support. Ayes 17, noes 13. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 177. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 62, Large Project Funding. Ayes 27, noes 2, conflict 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 178. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 73, Municipal Solid Waste Landfills. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Committee announcements, Chairman Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet Tuesday, February the 1st at a revised time, 7 a.m. We're still sleeping in a little. To consider the following bills. House Bill 189, Foreclosure and Redemption Revisions. House Bill 190, Electronic Fine Submittal. House Bill 198, Admissibility of Evidence in Sex Offense Cases. And House Bill 199, Eminent Domain Lands Possessed by the Federal Government.
Chairman Elloway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet Tuesday, February 1st at noon recess in House 18. We'll take up House Bill 242, Insurance, Surplus Lines, House Bill 255, Veterans Tax Exemption, House Bill 234, Alcohol Permits, Catering Permits, House Bill 224, Platted Plots Requirement.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet in 5 minutes in room 302 to discuss House Bill 205, House Bill 201, House Bill 215, House Bill 172, and House Bill 181.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet immediately upon adjournment in H-10 for consideration of the following bills. House Bill 97, Public School Financial Transparency, House Bill 144, School District Bonds, and House Bill 161, Interstate Compact on Students of Military Families.
Chairman Corbett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow, Tuesday, February 1st, 10 minutes after adjournment. We will hear House Bill 90, Vehicle Restoration, House Bill 194, Next of Kin Driver's License Option, House Bill 195, Motor Vehicle Registration Fees, and House Bill 235, Natural Gas Vehicles.
Vice Chairman Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet Wednesday at 8 o'clock in room H-10 to consider the following bills: 236, complimentary hunting licenses, persons with disabilities, House Bill 243, this is an exciting one, human remains, training of search and rescue dogs, and Senate File 27, engrossed paramutual commission amendments. Thank you.
Chairman Simulac.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow morning, Tuesday, February 1st, 7 a.m., room H-11, to hear House Bill 151, Hydropower Development, House Bill 135, State Land Improvement 2, House Bill 174, Designated Transfer of State Lands, and House Bill 156, Grand Teton National Park, Transfer of State Lands. Mr. Speaker, we will also meet, Agriculture number 5 will meet 15 minutes upon noon recess, and H-11 to hear House Bill 7, Wyoming Veterinary Medical Practice Act 2, House Bill 230, Eminent Domain Wind Energy Collector Systems, House Bill 223, Property Disclosure Statement, Wind Estate, and finally, House Bill 202, Railroad Fence Repairs. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chair Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, too, will meet immediately upon adjournment. And again, tomorrow morning at 8:30 for all referred bills.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. General, congratulations on your good work, ladies and gentlemen. Our general file list has shrunk from 34 bills to 30 bills because of your good work today. General file for tomorrow, the first 10 bills, House Joint Resolution 3, House Bill 129, House Bill 34, House Bill 36, House Bill 99, House Bill 188, House Bill 92, House Bill 178, House Bill 162, House Bill 103, and the other bills that are contained on the list. Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 9:30 tomorrow morning, February 1st, 2011.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The House will stand adjourned until Tuesday, February 1st, 2011, 9:30 a.m.